Can you all hear me pretty well with the microphone? Okay, great. So thanks for your patience. We're going to wait just a few more minutes until we're joined by our executive officer, and we do have a board member that will be joining us in a little while as well. So just give us a couple more minutes and we'll get started.
Did people back there hear Renee through the microphone?
Could you?
Yes, okay, good.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's cool.
No, Bill here.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started because we have a packed agenda. And if people are still settling in, that's okay. But I'm going to go ahead and get started because I don't want to get us too far behind. And I want to make sure we have time for some discussion as well and questions and answers. But we have a lot of good presentations lined up for you. And so I will just go ahead and get started. I'm Renee Purdy. Most of you know me. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to say hello to many of you in person this morning, but it's good to see you all here. We really appreciate that you came to this third workshop that we're having on the Enhanced Watershed Management Programs, and we're looking forward to a good discussion today about how the programs have been revised in response to the Regional Board staff's comments on the draft. And so before I get started, a couple things. I just wanted to make sure if you haven't been here before, if you need restrooms, the restrooms are out the door and around the corner. Actually, I guess you can exit out that door and they're right along that hallway. So if you need a restroom, they're out that way. I suppose I should tell you if there's an emergency, exit the building, you can all just follow us. We know where to go. So just follow us and we'll take you where we're supposed to go if there's any sort of fire drill or anything like that. Pretty square, exactly. So the other thing that I wanted to do is I wanted to do a couple introductions because we have a lot of regional board staff here, and also, of course, Sam Unger, our executive officer, is here to listen to the presentations and discussions today. And as I mentioned, we will be joined by one of our board members, board member Maria Moranian, in a little while as well, who will be listening and participating in the discussions today. Also, we have a number of our staff here, and I just want to say, as I've talked to many of you about, and many of you probably know, the eWIMP review process has been a very significant team effort on the part of the regional board, and we have a lot of people involved in that process, and many of them are sitting up here in the front row. Mr. Ivar Ridgway, he's the unit chief of our MS4 permitting unit. Irem Rendek is here. Deborah Brandes is here. Elizabeth Payne, right behind Deborah. Chris Lopez, right beside Elizabeth. And then over here we have Dr. C.P. Lai, and I don't know if I'm missing anybody behind the column, but I think that's everybody that we've got here. So just so you can start putting maybe faces with names if you haven't already, those are the staff that have been involved in the eWIMP review process as well as in the watershed management review process that we went through last year. So again, just go ahead and sit down. If you're just entering, make sure you've signed in the back on the sign-in sheet and picked up an agenda and a presentation as well. So what I want to do now is I just want to talk about briefly what the agenda is going to be. Hopefully everybody did pick up an agenda. We're going to start with a presentation by board staff, myself, for about 10 or 15 minutes. And then after that, we're going to have a series of presentations. If there are any elected officials in the audience, if you can just alert either Teresa, Kelly, or Gwendolyn in the back, we'll make sure to have you speak first if you're present, just because we know your time is very tight. So we'll make sure to give you that opportunity. And then after that, we're going to be following with a presentation by Gilda Bay, LA Waterkeeper, and NRDC with their comments on the revised eWIMPs. And then after that, we will be following with presentations by the eWIMP groups themselves on how they've addressed the comments of board staff in the revised eWIMPs that they submitted in January of this year. And then after that, we will also have a presentation by Mr. Riggs here, I believe. I don't think he's arrived yet, on behalf of some of his clients as well. And then at that point, we will open it up for a discussion. Any others who would like to comment on the revised eWIMPs that are present, you'll be welcome to do that, and then we'll have an opportunity to have a discussion and questions and answers of board staff, or I think if you have questions for some of the eWIMP groups, then that will be an opportunity to ask those of them as well. So with that, you know what I realized? I don't have time for 20 minutes. can you change the slides for me, please? Okay, that was good. Okay, so if you can just go to the first slide. Or the second slide, sorry. Thank you. So what I want to do is I just want to first review the EWIP timeline, review the timeline that we've been going through and where we are with that. So as you can see, the review process officially started in June of last year, 2015, when all of the participating permittees, many of you who are in the room today, submitted your draft EWIMs to the regional board. And you recall that we had a public workshop very soon after that on July 9th to introduce the EWIMs to the board and to stakeholders. And we then held a public comment period on the draft EWIMs as called for in the permit from July 1st to August 31st, so that stakeholders and the public could submit written comments on the draft EWIMs. Then in October of last year, the Los Angeles Water Board staff issued comments on the draft EWIMs and gave groups deadlines to submit their revised EWIMs to us. These comments were followed by our second EWIM workshop, which we had in November of last year, and as you may recall, that focused on the cost estimates for the EWIMs and the financial strategies provided in the EWIMs for implementation of the project. And we also focused on the reasonable assurance analysis that was presented in the various EWIMs. So that brings us to where we are now in the process. In January and February of this year, the groups, as I said, submitted revised EWIMs to the regional board in response to our October comment letters. These revised EWIMs are in the process of being reviewed right now to make sure that the comments that we provided to the groups have been adequately addressed. And the review process will then culminate next month in April, at which time the Los Angeles Water Board Executive Officer will have the decision to approve or deny each of the revised EWIMs. So now I'm going to go over some of the key staff comments on the draft EWIMs, which were included in our October comment letters. And I'm not going to touch on all of them, but as all of you probably are aware, all of our draft or our comment letters on the draft EWIMs, and all subsequent correspondence, including the revised EWIMs, are posted on our website. We have a dedicated page for watershed management programs and enhanced watershed management programs, and then individual pages for each of the watershed management program and EWIM groups, where we post all the correspondence back and forth between the groups and the board. So generally, the comments that I'm going to touch on today on the draft EWIMs fell into several categories, the first being the reasonable assurance analysis that was provided in the draft EWIMs. And in particular for this, comments were made with respect to the approaches taken by the EWIM groups and some of the assumptions used in that analysis. And we're not going to be touching a lot on the details of reasonable assurance analysis today. We will have a little bit of a presentation collectively by some of the groups on their RAA, but you probably recall that we had some very meaty presentations for those of you that attended the November workshop on the some of the key approaches that were taken by the EWIMs in doing the reasonable assurance analysis. The second category of comments was on the water quality characterization and priorities, and we made comments with regard to how groups characterize their watersheds, how they prioritize some of their pollutants, and how they incorporated timelines based on that prioritization of pollutants. The third category of comments that we generally had were on the specific watershed control measures that are laid out in the EWIMs, and we made comments in particular on the level of detail provided on those control measures, including level of detail with regard to interim milestones for implementing some of those key projects. The other area that we had comments on, and I'll get into this a little bit more later in my presentation, is on financial strategy, and we specifically talked about providing as much detail as possible on the group's plans to secure funding to implement the EWIMs. And then, as I mentioned, we had some comments on implementation timelines related to some of the pollutants that were covered by the EWIM. So I'm now going to go over some examples of revisions that have been made by groups in response to these comments. And I'll first start with examples related to the reasonable assurance analysis and control measures effectiveness. So some revisions were made to reevaluate, assess, and correct some load reduction assumptions that were made for particular control measures or BMPs. And this is an example from the Beach Cities group. In their draft EWIM, the group proposed catch basin inlet filters as a control measure to be installed within high priority catchment areas. And the group provided some documentation and studies on these filters, but board staff did comment on how the group was estimating the load reductions from these particular devices. And so to address this comment, the revised EWIM now includes a statement that the group will evaluate the efficiency of these devices with monitoring data that will be collected during the adaptive management process. And with the assurance then provided that if the efficiencies are less than what was assumed in the EWIM, then they'll implement additional BMPs to achieve the target load reductions and make up the difference in load reduction that was assumed. So for those of you who are joining, hopefully you're getting settled, and I just want to say we're being joined now. Thank you so much for joining us, Board Member Moranian. So we're joined by Board Member Moranian now. So thank you again for coming. Okay, so can we go to the next slide? So again, with regard to compliance schedules, another category of some of the comments that we had, some revisions were made to fix what were initially inadequate or not adequately supported compliance schedules for particular pollutants. And this above example shows a compliance schedule for dioxin, which is a persistent environmental contaminant. This is for the Upper LA River group. And originally, the compliance schedule for this pollutant was set at 2037, but board staff commented on this in its October comment letter, and in response, the group revised their EWIM to place compliance schedules for this pollutant in line with the LA River Metals TMDL timeline. So you can see that the schedule for this pollutant has been shortened to match the Category 1 metals pollutants in that TMDL schedule. So in some situations where comments were made by staff about a compliance schedule, the group didn't always revise their EWIM by changing the actual compliance schedule, but instead revised the EWIM by providing additional information to support the original compliance date in the draft EWIM. For example, this is the Upper Santa Clara River EWIM, and in this case, board staff commented that the group needed to include additional rationale and justification for using a final compliance date of 2035 for metals in the Santa Clara River. And in the revised EWIM, the group provided additional justification and rationale, and it's shown here on this slide. So next I do want to talk a little bit about the financial strategies in the EWIMs. One of the requirements for preparing an EWIM and being a part of an EWIM was to include a financial strategy in the enhanced watershed management program. And at the second EWIM workshop in November, as I mentioned, we spent about half of that workshop talking about the estimated costs presented by the groups in their draft EWIMs and the financial strategies proposed by the groups. The board is very aware that the cost estimates are very significant and are going to pose a great challenge to cities to fully implement the EWIMs. That being said, board staff feels it's very important to begin developing financial strategies and then to continue that process as groups move forward into EWIM implementation. And so we provided comments, I would say, in most, if not maybe all, I think, of the draft EWIMs regarding the financial strategies that were included and indicated that more detail should be put into the revised EWIMs to the extent possible on the financial strategies for EWIMs implementation. And specifically, the comments that we made generally focused on telling groups to evaluate and prioritize the various available funding sources and think about which of those funding sources was more feasible than others to meet the funding needs for the EWIMP. We also emphasized that groups should be thinking about near-term funding versus long-term funding and really focusing efforts on ensuring that they were actively securing funding and pursuing funding for the near-term projects within this permit term and next permit term, while at the same time thinking about longer-term funding strategies for the EWIMP. And our comments also ask groups to, in some cases, clarify the milestone commitments that were made in the draft EWIMPs. And we also clarified that any funding contingencies for milestones and schedules are not automatic, meaning that any modifications to milestones and schedules as a result of not being able to secure funding have to be approved by the executive officer, and even then are limited by TMDL compliance schedules that must be followed within the MS4 permit. So I want to show you a couple of examples. Here's a table prepared by the Upper LA River Group that quantifies and prioritizes the different potential funding sources in the near term and the long term. And as you can see in this table, the group ranked the Clean Water State Revolving Fund, or SRF, and service-related fees as potential funding sources that have high potential and feasibility in both the near term and long term. Additionally, the group looked at federal and state grants, property-based fees, and special assessment districts, and these were ranked to have a moderate potential or feasibility in the short term and either a moderate or high feasibility in the longer term. And one thing that I do want to point out, and I realize that many people in this room are already well aware of many of these things, but most of these EWIMPs have a planning and implementation horizon of anywhere from 15 to 20 to even 25 years. So when we're talking about near term, we're talking about within the next, say, 2 to 7 years, whereas long term, we're looking at funding strategies that will be developed and available a decade, 2 decades from now to implement many of these projects. Another example that I wanted to give before we move on to the next slide here is that the Beach Cities EWIMP group is developing an MOU between group members to develop a financial strategy. And in that revised EWIMP in particular, the group added for each city a discussion of the available funds and also a table detailing the expenditures and the budget for the current permit cycle as a demonstration that it had funding to implement the proposed projects for this permit term. So I'm going to walk through these very quickly, but I just thought it may be helpful. And I'm sorry, I see that the slide's getting a little cut off at the bottom, but you guys have copies, so you can see whatever is not making its way onto the screen there. I just wanted to walk through some of the potential funding sources that we know various groups have identified and have started looking into. As I mentioned, these include low-interest loans, the state revolving fund being one source of these. But another source of low-interest loans that I think some groups may start to be looking at, or I would encourage groups to look at, is the California Infrastructure and Economic Development Bank. It's another program that was created in 1994 to finance public infrastructure and private development that promote a healthy climate for jobs, contribute to a strong economy, and improve the quality of life in California communities. And that's its kind of mission statement or objective in terms of its funding. But I think there's the potential to take advantage of that source of funding for some of the projects being proposed in the draft EWIMPs. Next slide. So next, of course, we have fee-based programs that various groups are looking at on a medium to longer-term basis. These include service-related fees, property-based fees, as well as special assessment districts. And then, of course, we've had a lot of discussion, particularly with Prop 1, about the use of grants. And we do realize, and as I think I said at the November workshop, and many of us have been talking about, that ultimately the strategies for implementing these in terms of funding strategies is going to need to be a very multi-pronged approach that's going to include many sources of funding. And grants are one way of getting some of these early near-term projects started and even funding projects into the future as well. We do recognize that it has limitations, but we see it as a good opportunity for some of the early term projects, particularly with the Prop 1 funding available, and hoping you all are actively in the process of applying for the funding that is available under Prop 1. I think everybody recognizes that Los Angeles County is very well positioned to apply for those funds because of the work that you've done on the watershed management programs and the enhanced programs already. So the next thing I want to do is talk a little bit about some of the implementation timelines and the draft and revised enhanced watershed management program. So I just want to point this out for those of you that aren't already more familiar than you'd like to be with some of these diagrams. These graphs show the projects that the Malibu Creek Enhanced Watershed Management Program will have to implement by 2032 to achieve final compliance with their EWIM. It represents 49 acre feet of Green Street capacity at a cost of $108 million, again, to achieve final compliance by 2032. And as I said, we recognize these costs and also the volumes to be captured by these EWIMs represent very significant goals for groups and for the county as a whole. And we look forward to continuing to work with you as much as possible. In fact, just had a phone call this morning to talk about additional ideas with regard to funding sources that could be used to help support some of these projects and, for example, the Green Street projects that are proposed in many of the EWIMs. So we're hoping to continue to have a lot of discussions with the groups about how to go forward with implementation. So here's a similar figure from the Upper San Gabriel River Enhanced Watershed Management Program. This shows a total of 566 acre feet of BMP capacity that would be necessary for final compliance by 2036. And this group does include significant amounts of regional BMPs that may need to be placed on private property. So that is also going to be another challenge that we'll be working, I'm sure be working together on and having discussions about how to make sure that that's achievable. Similarly, here's a figure of the Biona Creek EWIM group on the right-hand side, showing an estimate of approximately 1,700 acre feet needed for compliance. We understand, again, that these are significant outlays of projects and capital that need to be implemented and represent a real sea change in Los Angeles in terms of stormwater management and capture. Next slide. So next, I just want to say one more thing about implementation timelines, kind of to wrap up with regard to these things, which is that in our comments, we did provide a number of comments related to implementation timelines, and we particularly looked at a couple of things when we were looking at timelines presented in the EWIMs. One, we looked to make sure that the REA-based milestones reflect all the applicable TMDL schedules and address all water body pollutant combinations that need to be covered in the permit. So those being all the TMDL pollutants, also the 303D listed pollutants, as well as other pollutants that have receiving water limit exceedances in the past. And then the other thing that we looked at was milestones for the high priority projects. Different groups call them different things. In some cases, you'll see them phrased as signature projects. And while we understand that in some cases it's not possible to have detailed milestones for every project for a program that's going to be implemented over 20 or 25 years, we did look for milestones for implementation of some of those signature or high priority projects. And the other thing that we looked at, I show here is I have it written down as commitment, project substitutions, and partnerships, meaning that we're looking for commitments for either projects or a certain number of projects to reach a certain load reduction or volume capture amount. We do understand that over time there may be shifting among projects, and a lot of the groups already acknowledge that in their draft EWIMs, that there are different categories in terms of Green Street BMPs, low-impact development BMPs, regional BMPs, and that there may be shifting among those categories of BMPs to achieve the ultimate load reduction or volume reduction that's necessary. And having that sort of project substitution is perfectly acceptable, so long as ultimately the load reductions or the volume reductions that need to be achieved are achieved. And so we looked at those places where there were that sort of flexibility built into the eWIMP. If that flexibility is not built into the eWIMP now, there's always the process of basically requesting a revision or modification to a project within the Enhanced Watershed Management Program. And we've already been working with some groups on that with regard to the watershed management programs. And then lastly, I've already touched on this a bit, but we did look at funding and project milestone contingencies. And again, as I said, where groups have indicated contingencies related to projects, we just have emphasized that those contingencies are not automatic. They have to be vetted through the regional board, and any modifications to schedules need to have approval by the regional board. And even so, there are some constraints on the types of modifications that can be made. So I just wanted to put, it may be a little bit hard to see, I understand this, it's a little small, but this is an example from the Bionic Creek eWIMP group that gives an example of their fixed RAA-based compliance target, but then outlines various potential scenarios that would allow them to meet that compliance target. So that just shows some of the flexibility that's built in, but with the assumption or the requirement that ultimately that load reduction needs to be achieved or that volume reduction needs to be achieved. This is another example. This is from the Upper San Gabriel River Group. And previously, the group did not indicate milestones for what they called their signature regional eWIMP project. So in the revised eWIMP, after we commented on that, the group gave design, permitting, and completion milestones for those signature projects. Next. Okay, great. Next steps. All right. So just closing with my presentation then. First, with regard to the review of the revised eWIMPs, staff is going to be finalizing their review of the revised eWIMPs, which, as I said, we received in January and February. We're going to continue to work with the eWIMP groups. I know many of you have been getting calls from the staff that I introduced you to at the beginning of the day, and we'll continue to work with you as necessary with regard to your revised eWIMPs. And additionally, the comments that are made today are going to be taken into consideration in the review of the revised eWIMPs, our final review. And then next will be that the Regional Board Executive Officer must approve or deny the revised Enhanced Watershed Management Program in April. That date varies a little bit from eWIMP group to eWIMP group, but by the end of April, that decision needs to be made for all 12 of the eWIMPs. And then after that, if approved, the eWIMP groups will then work to begin implementation immediately of the final approved eWIMPs. And then lastly, staff will evaluate compliance with the eWIMP milestones moving forward. And then for the permittees, as you know, you will be assessing the effectiveness of your programs and then working to modify your eWIMPs as necessary through the adaptive management process, which will occur every 2 years after the approval of your eWIMP. And with that, I'm going to close, and I would like to just see, Teresa, do we have any speaker cards? You have one, just one? Okay. And do we have any elected officials in the room? No? Okay. And nobody hiding behind the columns? Okay. All right. In that case, what I'm going to do then is you all should have an agenda, hopefully. So I'm going to go ahead and then start with the scheduled presentations that we have. And the first up will be Gilda Bay, LA Waterkeeper, and NRDC with their presentation on their comments on the revised eWIMPs for 15 minutes. Yeah.
Board Member Moynihan, staff. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Rita Campeloff, and I'm the Science and Policy Director for Gila Bay. I'd like to start off by thanking staff for holding this workshop to bring all stakeholders in the evening process together. This process has been slightly different from the usual in that the product we're discussing today is one that's created by permittees, not board staff. While we certainly understand the rationale behind having permittees create their own plans, this has led to some issues, and I'll be honest, and occasionally frustrations over the opportunities for public participation, because there simply hasn't been clarity with what, if anything, happens to comments that we submit. Our group, and no doubt the other members of the public who submitted comments, spent significant time and resources reviewing and commenting on these plans. While we commend the staff for the very thorough review they did, and I will also say that in many instances, it was clear that they had thoughtfully considered our letters. Because there's no clear direction for comments to be addressed and responded to, there were also many instances where comments that we thought were quite critical were not addressed in any way, and we're not sure why. I will also mention that the staff has graciously offered to meet with us to discuss any lingering questions we have about these comments, and while we appreciate this and plan to take them up on that offer, this does not make for an efficient process and does not provide a written record, which is important given that these plans, as Renee mentioned, are to guide decision-making for the next 20 years or more in some cases. Arthur Pugsley from Waterkeeper will speak to this issue in more detail, and Becky Hyatt from NRDC will discuss the E1 process moving forward from this point. I'd like to use my remaining few minutes just highlighting some of the remaining concerns we have on the four E1s that we were able to review, Upper Ellie River, Upper San Gabriel River, Peach Cities, and North San Monica Bay. In general, across the board, there was a lack of comprehensive quantification and documentation of error in these plans. There are a tremendous amount of assumptions made, necessarily. However, in order to have confidence or reasonable assurance that these plans will achieve their goals, there needs to be an understanding of the uncertainty inherent in the proposed strategies, or at the very least, a sensitivity analysis so that the most critical assumptions are identified and targeted for more careful tracking going forward. While again, we understand the need for assumptions in many cases, assumptions should be conservative and have to be based on the best available information, and in some instances, specifically with the evaluation of certain BMPs such as catch basin inserts, which I know again Renee mentioned, we are not confident that this is the case. The strategies proposed in these plans, in several instances, rely on achieving very ambitious goals, particularly with regards to green streets implementation, non-structural BMP load reductions, and BMPs on private properties, which just aren't supported currently by concrete plans, or even at the very least schedules to create such plans. There were also requests for further support for calibration and RAA results that we feel were not fully responded to. Finally, in many instances, there's still a lack of detail in schedules and funding sources that calls into question whether any of these projects will be realized. While we understand the real challenges permittees are faced with regarding long-term funding of these plans, and indeed this is an issue that we are actively working on alleviating, there should at least be plans for near-term funding. And regardless, despite some of the language included in these plans, permit compliance should not be contingent on the availability of funds. Given the significance of these issues, we strongly believe that resolution of these comments needs to occur before these plans can be approved. And with that, I'll turn it over to Arthur. Thanks.
Thank you for this opportunity to comment orally. I will submit a follow-up letter to Ms. Curry to provide citations for any of our sites. Again, my name is Arthur Pugsley, the Senior Staff Attorney with Los Angeles Waterkeeper. Let me start by joining with Rita and saying I appreciate the hard work of reviewing the events done by the Regional Board staff. I believe after this week, I can really empathize with the hard work done by Regional Board staff. Nonetheless, despite the efforts of staff, the EWIP review process to date contains a serious procedural flaw. Namely, the regional board has a legal duty under both state and federal law to respond in writing to comments received on the EWIPs, but has yet to do so. The source of this obligation arises from the language of the 2015 State Board Order, and more broadly from state and federal law. Now, the State Board set a standard for the public review of the EWIPs in its 2015 order. That public process must vet and facilitate revisions as necessary. However, the lack of written responses to comments on the EWIPs from the regional board results in the failure to meet this standard. For example, public comments cannot facilitate revisions if it is not possible to determine to what extent public comments on draft EWIPs have been considered or even acknowledged by the permittees. The Clean Water Act itself requires public participation be provided for in the revision of any plan or program developed pursuant to the Act. And the EWIGs clearly are subject to this requirement, hence our presence here today. However, the Clean Water Act regulations also require responses to comments at the time any final permit decision is issued. Permit modifications are included within the definition of a final permit decision. Approval of the EWIMS modifies the underlying permit by adding substantive requirements and timetables to the inchoate EWIM process included in the 2012 permit. Thus, the Clean Water Act requirements for responses to comments apply. In the alternate, you could view the EWIMS as the functional equivalent of a permit, and the same reasoning would apply, and you'd come to the same conclusion. State law contains two independent sources of requirements for written responses. The Porter Cologne Act incorporates the Clean Water Act in its entirety, and thus the same reasoning I just spoke of would apply there. And the second source is CEQA. The approval of the EWIMS is the approval of a project by a state agency. Now, the NPDES approval process, and hence the EWIMS that arise from the 2012 permit, are exempt from Chapter 3 of CEQA per the Water Code. However, CEQA exemptions are narrowly construed. Thus, a facial exemption from Chapter 3 cannot be reasonably expanded to encompass other chapters of CEQA. The approval of the EWIMS, thus all of CEQA minus Chapter 3, and potentially minus one small part of Chapter 2.6 that's inapplicable here, are applicable to the EWIM processes. The CEQA, and that's because the CEQA requirement for responses to comments is found in Chapter 2, which is outside the scope of the regional board exemption for the NPDES permitting process. In summary, having invited public comment, as it is legally required to do, the regional board cannot now avoid the legal obligation to consider and respond to comments received in writing. The highly variable approach taken by the EWIM groups in considering comments, and the difficulty in ascertaining whether the EWIM groups have considered some comments at all, only further underscores the need for the regional board to respond to the comments received in a formal written manner. This is the only way to ensure the degree of uniformity, transparency, accountability, and rigor that is currently lacking. Thank you.
Good morning, Board Member Gramian, Regional Board staff, and members of EWIM Group. My name is Becky Hyatt, and I'm with the Natural Resources and Defense Council. First of all, I want to thank the staff for holding this workshop today. For decades now, as non-permittee stakeholders, NRDC, LA Waterkeeper, and Gilda Bay have been working to ensure that cities in LA County control the stormwater discharges and that the LA Regional Board enforce the pollution control requirements of the MS4 permit when needed. As we all know, the 2012 permit introduced this new paradigm for MS4 permitting, this alternative compliance approach, otherwise known as the WIMP and EWIMP. Now, although the EWIMP and WIMP scheme is now viewed as the new MS4 permit structure, the State Board, in its final order upholding its 2012 permit, has made clear that the goal, the ultimate goal of this alternative compliance approach, remains the same as the goal of any MS4 permit, that is, to achieve water quality standards. As such, the EWIMP must not only fully comply with per se permit requirements for program development, but also they must ensure that this alternative compliance approach will actually achieve water quality standards in a timely fashion. As we alluded to earlier, there is still a litany of deficiencies that continue to exist in the four revised EWIMPs that we have reviewed. And these deficiencies remain primarily as a result of the permittee's failure to fully consider and respond to comments that both we and staff have identified in the revised program. And these are issues that, if left unfixed, will surely not put permittees on this well-defined, transparent, enforceable, and rigorous pathway to meeting permit compliance as articulated in the State Board's final order. So, in other words, these revised EWIMs in their current state neither meet the requirements of the 2012 permit nor the standards required by the State Board. And as a result, company should not be allowed to implement new EWIC in lieu of demonstrating strict compliance with new limits. All 12 draft EWIMs, as Renee mentioned earlier, will be considered for approval or denial by the end of April. If the EWIMs do not meet the clear requirements of the 2012 permit for program development, then they must be denied by the executive officer as required by the permit. And consequently, permittees will have to demonstrate immediate compliance with the permit receiving water limitation. At least for the 4 EWIMs that we have reviewed, if those draft programs are approved or conditionally approved without any further revision to remedy the existing shortcomings, we will be sure to challenge the decision. As an initial matter, we continue to maintain our firm stance that conditional approvals are unlawful, in violation of both the 2012 permit and federal and state law. In addition, the approval of clearly deficient EWIMs runs afoul of explicit permit provisions for what constitutes a sufficiently developed EWIM in order to be approved by the Regional Board or executive officer. But perhaps most significantly, such a decision by the Regional Board or executive officer would be a huge disservice to the local communities that depend on the region's healthy, clean water for a variety of sustenance-related and recreational purposes. We urge both staff and the board to avoid this result, and to that end, we will work with staff in whatever is the most efficient manner moving forward in the timeline that we have to ensure that the existing deficiencies in the revised EWIM be fixed by their deadline for approval. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. So next we're going to have the Biomatic Watershed Management Group. And I'm not sure who's speaking for each group. Okay. And then we're going to follow that with the Dominguez Channel Watershed Management Group.
Thank you, Renee. Good morning, board members, region board staff, everybody else. My name is Huub Fox. I'm a senior environmental engineer, city of Los Angeles. So you guys can hear me?
Yeah, you're going to have to. You have to be close to this, to the microphone.
Is it better? Okay. All right. All right. So let me start again. My name is Huub Fox. I'm a senior environmental engineer with the City of Los Angeles Watershed Protection Division. And talking here today on behalf of 4 watersheds, you see the names over there, and about 30 partner agencies. Next slide, please. So I have about 20 slides in which I will give a brief overview of our 4 watersheds, the 4 EWIMs that we developed, but then quickly go over to the comments that we received from the regional board, the revisions that we made to the EWIMs in response to those comments, focusing on 2 areas, regional DMP planning and the financial strategy. Next slide. So here you have a map of the 4 watersheds, and you see the names of the 30 partner agencies. To the north and the east is the Upper Los Angeles River watershed. Back in 2013, we started with 16 agencies. Then in 2014, San Fernando and South Almonte joined the group, bringing the total now to 18 agencies. In the center, we have the Bayona Creek watershed, a group of 8 agencies working closely together for over 10 years. The same can be said for the Santa Monica Bay jurisdictions 2 and 3. To the west, 5 agencies working closely together since the early 2000s. Then the story is a little bit different for the Dominguez Channel watershed. In 2013, we started with 6 agencies. Then 1 year later, the city of Lomita joined the group, and more recently, Parson and Longdale joined the group, bringing now the total to 9 agencies as well. Next slide. So what you see here is a summary of our EWIMs. And on the left side, you see the names of the 4 watersheds. In the center, you have the BMP implementation strategy. And essentially, it's a multi-benefit green approach to maximize the capture of stormwater for infiltration or for reuse to offset potable water. You see 3 BMP categories: LID, distributed green streets, and regional projects. But you also see that all watersheds, they focus on the regional projects to maximize the capture of stormwater, but we need all 3 categories: regional, distributed, and LID to make sure that we meet the final milestones. To the right, you see the BMP capacity or the volume of BMPs that we will need to implement to meet those final milestones. And if you add those numbers up, the total volume for those 4 watersheds is 8,500 acre feet of BMP volume. And since we always like to express things in rose bowls, 8,500 acre feet is equivalent to the volume of 34 rose bowls. Next slide. So I mentioned before that stormwater capture is really the focus of our EWIMs. So if we were to implement our EWIMs fully, everything that is in there, and this slide summarizes how much stormwater these 4 EWIMs will capture at their final milestones. Adding up those numbers, it's 125,000 acre feet of stormwater captures each year on the assumption of an annual storm year of 15 inches of rain. So 125,000 acre feet, it's a lot of water, and it's equivalent to the potable water use of 1.1 million people. If you assume a per capita water use of 100 gallons per day. So this is in a nutshell. Next slide, please. Our 4 EWIMs, moving over now to the comments that we received. And in total, we received 200 comments, give or take 50 comments per EWIM. And of course, that indicates the time and the effort that region board staff spend on reviewing the EWIMs. We appreciate your time and we appreciate the comments. But most of those comments that we received were requests for clarification or requests for more information. And those comments were easily be addressed because they did not require major revisions. However, there were 3 areas where regional board comments required us to do some more work. And the first area was the reasonable assurance analysis, the RAA, and that is something that Dustin Bambick will be discussing later today in this workshop in a separate presentation. The second area was the regional BMP planning, and the third area was the financial strategy. Next slide. So, as you may know, our EWIMs identify about 10 signature projects in the EWIM. Those are the high priority regional projects that we identified to be implemented first, high priority. The exact number of signature projects depends a little bit on the size of the watershed, as well as of the number of agencies participating in the watershed. We provided a lot of information, but the regional board asked us to provide more information on the targeted storm sites, drainage areas, near-term milestones, as well as the planning and funding of those regional projects. this is an example of how we addressed the comments, and this is an example from the Bionic Creek watershed. Other events have similar tables, but here you see for the Bionic Creek watershed, we have 10 signature projects, and for each one of those 10, we identify lead agency, other agencies that are draining through the project, the type of BMPs that have been selected, the drainage area, the capacity of the BMPs, the design storm, as well as the cost of the BMPs. This table does not have the information on planning and funding, but that information you can find in the e-books themselves. But just to give you an idea, the city of Beverly Hills, row number 2, is moving forward with their La Cienega project. They are in the process of obtaining an RFP to get a consultant on board for the design and pre-design of their project. The city of Culver City is moving forward with their Culver Boulevard Median project. And in fact, last month they submitted a grant application to SMBUC to obtain funding from Prop 84. Then lastly, the County of Los Angeles is moving forward with the Ladera Park Regional BMP. It's the last row in this table. They're working on the pre-design and the concept report of this project, and they're going to apply for Prop 1 and Prop 84 funding. Next slide. And next slide. All right, so there was a little bit of progress in Bayonne and Cree. Similar progress is in the other watersheds, and I'll just give you a few examples. This is the city of La Cañada Flint Ridge in the upper LA River watershed with their Foothill Boulevard Link Greenbelt project. This is a project that is combining transportation with stormwater capture. And they obtained they secured full funding for this project, I believe. They obtained money from a federal transportation grant program. And they will start construction of this project by the end of next year. Next slide. This is City of LA, also in the upper LA River watershed. This is our Avalon Green Alley Network LID demonstration project. We secured funding for this project, Prop 84, as well as a grant from the Trust for Public Lands. This project is in construction. To the right, you see the completed portion of the project. To the left, it's the south portion of the project. It's a rendering and still in construction, but we hope to complete this project by the end of this year or early next year. Also in Upper Los Angeles River, Los Angeles County with the Roosevelt Park BMP project. I believe it's the funding has been secured from Prop 84, and they're working right now on the design and pre-design of the project. Next slide. This is again the Ladera Park Regional BMP project, County of Los Angeles, in the Bayonne Creek watershed. They're planning to apply for Prop 1 as well as Prop 84 funding, and concept report and pre-design is in progress. City of Santa Monica is doing a lot of projects. We only have room here for 2 projects. Both projects have been identified in the EWIM for the Santa Monica Bay watershed. One project at our Civic Center, the other project at Memorial Park. Both projects are going to divert stormwater from storm drain, goes into a detention basin, and they will reuse the water to offset potable water use. And they already have funding secured for those 2 projects, and they will begin shortly. Dominguez-Llano watershed, the Machado Lake ecosystem rehabilitation project. This is a project by the City of LA. It's a large project. It's $110 million. And we secured all funding through our PROPO program. This project is in construction. It's moving forward. It's restoring the lake, the ecosystem. It's water quality improvement. It's multiple benefits. It's everything. Like I said, it is in construction. And we hope to complete it by the end of next year. Then lastly, this is also the Dominguez Channel Watershed. This is the City of Carson, the newest member in the group. And they brought in the Carriage Crest Park Regional BMP. And look at that drainage area. It's 1,100 acres. It's a lot. And they are planning to target the 85% are stored from that drainage area. That's a huge amount of water. And this is also an example of regional collaboration because it's four agencies here. Carson, Torrance, City of LA, and the County of LA. Okay, next slide. And the next one. Alright, so the last group of comments that we received from the regional board concerns the financial strategy, and Renee already spoke a little bit about the revisions that we made. Next slide, please. But in general, our eWIMS had a financial strategy, and we provided a lot of information on the funding options that we identified in the eWIMS. However, the region board requested additional information, in particular on the near and long-term feasibility of those funding options, the applicability to the BMP types, as well as the potential availability of the various options. Next slide. So, again, this is an example of how we provided the additional information, and we summarize it in a table. This is an example from the Beyond the Creek Watershed, a similar table you can find in the other three eWIMS. But what it does, and I believe you showed this slide earlier this morning as well, that what it does show is it shows the various funding options, and for each watershed we estimate the amount of money that the option would be able to provide to the watershed. We also evaluated whether it is more applicable for specific projects or more in general for programs. And we evaluated whether the option would be feasible for short-term funding or it would take us longer, so more like a long-term strategy. Next slide. So, in summary, when it comes to the financial strategy, as I hope we have demonstrated in this presentation, a lot of the individual agencies are moving forward with looking for funding for the implementation of the eWIMS. And the primary focus right now is on those regional signature projects. And a lot of those projects are moving forward in some way or the other. At the same time, a lot of these agencies are working collectively together as a group to investigate opportunities for regional funding approaches, and that essentially is a continuation of the work that was started by Richard Watson and Ken Farshall. But regardless, we believe that public support is going to be critical, and that was also something that was discussed in the previous workshop that we had. Because without public support for the eWIMS, it is going to be very difficult for us to secure funding for implementing the eWIMS. So, closing remarks. First of all, we believe that these eWIMS are great planning documents. And probably this is really a great effort. We use a lot of smart people to develop those plans. These are probably the best planning, watershed planning documents in the region, if not wider. We appreciate all the comments that we received from region board staff and help and others, because it helped us to make those plans better. Then, while the plans have not been formally approved yet, we're already moving forward with implementing some of the projects that have been identified in the EWIMS, in particular those regional signature projects. Then lastly, we of course look forward to the approval of these plans and really start the implementation. With that, thank you.
All right, so next we have Beach Cities. John is here. Great. Okay, fantastic. Right, so the Beach Cities Eastman Group and John Dettel will be, from Torrance, will be presenting.
So, I'm John Dillon from the City of Torrance, representing the Beach Cities Watershed Management Group, to go over our comments and flags for the Enhanced Watershed Management Plan. Next slide, please. First of all, we addressed the comments regarding water body pollutant combinations. We added interim and final WQBLs and RWLs for all categories 1, 2, and 3 pollutants. We added water body pollutant combinations for Dominguez Channel and the Dominguez Channel estuary to be consistent with the Dominguez Channel watershed group we went. And we added compliance milestones where requested. For Machado Lake, the Machado Lake watershed has been removed from the Beach Cities EWIM, and the City of Torrance has submitted a separate EWIM for the Machado Lake watershed in for the City of Torrance, and I can speak to that later if there's any questions. In that tributary to that watershed was a 0.0018% area that was from Redondo Beach that drained into the City of Torrance. And in our EWIM, we're saying that we're addressing those with the minimum control measures, which we'll talk to later. All right, we also removed appendices C, D, E, and F from the draft EWIM as they relate to the Machado Lake watershed. In our EWIM, we've also proposed several structural BMPs. For Santa Monica Bay, we're going to proceed with 100% trash load reduction through the implementation of catch basin screens. We're also going to address the wet weather bacteria TMDLs through the Manhattan Beach Infiltration Project, through the Hermosa Beach Infiltration Project, Hermosa Greenbelt Project, and Park Number 3 Project, and also through proposed distributed green space TMDLs. That's for Santa Monica Bay. For the Dominguez Channel, we're going to come with compliance with dry weather bacteria. We've proposed a power line easement and Manhattan Beach filtration project, Artesia Boulevard and the Hawthorne Boulevard filtration projects, and to address Dominguez Channel toxics TMDL, we're proposing catch basin filter inserts for the City of Torrance and Green Street BMPs. It says here Redondo Beach, Manhattan Beach, but those are also proposed for Torrance too. This presentation wouldn't be complete if we didn't address some of the projects that we have completed since the bacteria TMDL was adopted. The County of Los Angeles has installed low-flow diversion pump stations at our high-priority outfalls. The City of Hermosa Beach has completed the Pier Avenue Improvement Project and the Hermosa Strand Infiltration Project. The City of Manhattan Beach has completed the Forest Concrete Paving Project for a parking lot and Greenbelt Infiltration Project. The The city of Redondo Beach has completed catch basin screens as part of their Esfalande Street resurfacing project. And also they completed the Alta Vista Stormwater Diversion Reuse Park Reuse Project, which stores and reuses stormwater for irrigation. And Redondo Beach completed the Sapphire Street Storm Drain Diversion and Infiltration Project. And the city of Torrance has completed bioswales for our city yard, CDS units for Torrance Beach, and we recently completed the Stormwater Basin Enhancement Project, which affects about 1,500 acres of the Santa Monica Bay watershed. Next slide, please. We've also proposed some minimum control measure enhancements. We're implementing the Clean Bay Restaurant Certification Program, in which restaurants in our watershed are inspected annually instead of twice every 5 years. We've also, for most of each in Torrance, our LID ordinances have are for all developments and have no minimum threshold. And for all the cities in our group, we sweep the streets weekly. And that's above the minimum design. Next slide. You can see here the budgets that have been appropriated for each city. But we're also pursuing Prop 1 grant funds for the Manhattan Beach Infiltration Trench Project and the Hermosa Beach Greenbelt Infiltration Project. We've hired a consultant to help us with that grant application. And the cities have recently approved $1.5 million for a three-year monitoring program for the SEMP, which is a substantial financial investment. And the city of Torrance is finalizing their optimized street sweeping program. Our city didn't have a no parking street for street sweeping signs before a couple years ago for the city, so we adopted a program for the whole city. We've completed a major portion of the we've done all of the Machalik watershed. We've done most of the Santa Monica Bay watershed. And the project that we're going out with this summer has a budget of $880,000. We'll complete the installation of those no parking for street sweeping signs for the rest of the city. And also included in that project are our trash catch basin trash screens to complete the Santa Monica Bay watershed area and address the priority areas from the news channel. So that will be done this summer. There were comments in regards to the reasonable assurance analysis. The model result tables were updated to reflect the baseline runoff volume, concentration, and load for 90th percentile condition. Detailed daily results for all model BMP conditions have been provided in terms of volume, concentration, and load for the BMP influent and effluent. And an example illustrating the RAA results of a modeled subwatershed have also been provided in attachment K. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available to answer any questions. Okay.
All right, thank you, John. Yeah, I think we're gonna keep going through the presentations, and then at the end, I know hopefully you're jotting down questions if you have them on particular eWIMPs, but we'll just have all the questions at the end. So next up, we're gonna have the Malibu Creek eWIMP group. Great. And just a reminder, I know this thing is a little short, but please, for the speakers, just try to speak very close to the microphone so the people in the back of the room can hear you. You might have to bend over, I'm sorry.
Can everyone hear me? Okay, good morning. My name is Daniel Lapp, and I'm the consultant for the Malibu Creek Watershed eWIMP. And I'm going to be presenting our key revisions to the document on behalf of the Malibu Creek eWIMP agencies that are on the list here. Next slide, please. So this is the Malibu Creek watershed. Quick review, the watershed exists in both Ventura and L.A. County. On the upper part of the watershed in L.A. County is where most of the urbanized area is, where the cities are located, unincorporated county, and the parts of the upper watershed and lower watershed. With a significant amount of area in the watershed of open space land and state national park land. Next slide. So today I'm going to talk about some of the key revisions. We're addressing the comment letter that was received by the regional board dated on October 27th, 2015. We submitted the revised eWIMP on January 27th. I'm going to go through these key revisions. I'll talk about one example project. Next slide. So the first key revision, the comment received by the regional board had to do with Santa Monica Bay Beaches bacteria TMDL. Those requirements were initially not incorporated into the eWIMP, and so we have updated the eWIMP to include those requirements, including meeting the compliance states of both the interim compliance state of 2018 and the final compliance of 2021. Next slide. One of the regional board comments had to do with the volume of stormwater to be retained. And so they were looking for the total volume for the combination of regional BMPs, green streets, at various stages of implementation within each of the sub-watersheds. So we have updated the document to include all of the different watershed control measures, the volume of water that is retained by those control measures. Those are included in Appendix 7C. And we've also updated the eWIMP to talk about specific BMP capacities. Next slide. One of the comments also had to do with the retention of stormwater volume, looking at the specific regional projects and how much retention of the 85th percentile 24-hour event was included for each of those projects, as well as all the non-stormwater for the tributary area. So our projects within the Malibu Creek watershed, a good portion of them had large tributary areas, and so we weren't able to retain all of them, all of the stormwater in those areas. But some of the projects do. We've updated the eWIMP to identify which projects actually retain the full 85th percentile 24-hour event. Next slide. Another comment from the regional board had to do with the integration of interim milestones associated with the eWIMP, and particularly in the place of the non-structural institutional controls. And so what we've done is, in one of our tables, we've added specific dates to when each of the institutional controls will be met by each eWIMP agency. Next slide. Final comment I'll go through has to do with the benthic TMDL from Malibu Lagoon. This fair amount of discussion with the regional board, we were trying to identify an implementation schedule for this particular TMDL. And so one of the problems is that there were no, in the Los Angeles region, there were no sediment and benthic community effect TMDLs for estuaries in place, so we looked outside of the region. We looked towards the San Diego region, which has a very similar TMDL for the Mosquitoes Lagoon, shares very similar characteristics to Malibu Creek Lagoon. That TMDL had a 20-year implementation schedule to meet the final waste load allocations, and so we've included that same type of time frame to 2032 for meeting the Malibu Creek benthic TMDL, and that's been included in the document. Next slide. Finally, I just want to briefly go through one of the example projects that the eWIMP agency will be implementing moving forward. This is a project in Gates Canyon Park, and it's a co-project between LA County and the city of Calabasas. Drainage area is primarily LA County, with the park actually being owned by the city of Calabasas. So this project will capture the 85th percentile storm for an approximate drainage area of 105 acres. That stormwater will be both infiltrated as well as harvested and used for irrigation within the park. We'll be maintaining the recreational benefits for that particular park. And the eWIMP agencies have also applied for $1 million grant with the Ocean Protection Council under the project. Okay.
Thank you. Next up is Miranda Del Rey. Thank you.
Good My name is PJ Moon. I'm with the County of Los Angeles, and I am speaking on behalf of the City of Los Angeles, Culver City, and the LA County Flood Control, on behalf of the Marina Del Rey group. Just a quick recap of the Marina Del Rey watershed. It's a small watershed, but we have many challenges, including the high groundwater, because we're built on the marina. We have very limited open space opportunities. In addition, we have a very aggressive PMDO schedule, depending on what PMDO deadlines coming within the next 5 years. Next slide. We received the comments from the regional board staff in October, and most of the comments were requests for more clarification or information on certain items. These items included updating the PMDO limits, more detail about our current programs, and providing more documentation. The comments also asked for an update on some of our regional projects, including the Costco project in Culver City, and also the Oxford Basin project that the Flood Control District is working on. And also there are numerous RAA questions regarding statistical analysis, calibration coefficients, justification of the 85th percentile critical storm. And we were able to do all, we were able to provide address all the comments. In fact, we met with the regional board staff in November, and we got some clarification on some of the misunderstandings, such as we have a Marina Del Rey toxic TMDL and a Santa Monica Bay TMDL, DDT TMDL, so there are two TMDLs for the same pollutant, so we wanted to hash that out and see which TMDL should apply, and we were able to hash that out. We also resolved some issues with conflicting schedules and figures, and we also met with Dr. C.P. Lai and addressed all the RAA comments. We submitted the EWIP in January and also attached the comment response matrix. So if you wanted to see all those responses, I saw that the regional board also posted all those comment response matrices online. Next slide. Here's an update of the Costco Culver City Partnership project. The scope has actually expanded. We're now taking 15 more acres. The City of LA we're diverting 42 acres of Culver City and an additional 15 acres of the City of LA. This project was awarded $750,000 from the Countywide Competitive Grant Program, Prop A, administered by Open Space District. The total project cost is $4 million. This will be shared by Costco and the city agencies, and it will also be covered by the grant. We're hoping to complete this project late 2017, early 2018. This project will also apply for a Prop 1 grant as well, so this project will be constructed very soon. Another major comment, next slide. Another major comment that we received was an update on the Oxford Basin project. This is a detention basin that the Flood Control District maintains, and it's at the downstream of the City of LA and Culver City watershed. And we are awarded $2 million for Prop 84 SMDRC, another $1.5 million by Irwin from Prop 84. The total project cost is $12 million. All the in-basin work has been completed already as of December. There's a circulation berm that will hopefully improve water quality by increasing oxygenation. We're excavating contaminated sediment inside the basin. And we're hoping to complete this project with all the above surface amenities by summer 2016. Next slide. We're also doing a lot of smaller projects. The library parking lot project will be next summer. And the parking lot 9 project is this summer. Lots of LID and redevelopment going on in the marina. So we are working on the Green Street projects. And so we are trying our best to work on all these E1 projects and hope to help improve water quality. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moon.
Okay, so next up we have North Santa Monica Bay.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Bacola Brown. I'm the Senior Environmental Programs Coordinator for the City of Malibu. I'm here today representing the North Santa Monica Bay Coastal Watersheds Group. So right here we have an image of the North Santa Monica Bay Coastal Watersheds EWIMP area. As you can see on the map, it primarily covers Santa Monica Bay jurisdictional groups 1 and 4. And in that little small saddle there, the small portion of the lower watershed of Jurisdiction 9, which is the Malibu Creek watershed,
as it falls within the city of Malibu's limits. This is basically a land use area map, and what the predominant feature that you'll see is that there's a lot of open space. There's a lot of state parkland and national parkland. There's some limited commercial scattered throughout. It's a little hard to see on there, but there's some purple spots that are commercial. But most of the developed land is single-family residential. The entire Ewen area is 55,121 acres. As I said, it's largely undeveloped, with about 93% of that area being vacant land use. There are portions of six HUC-12s across that entire region. We have very limited MS4 infrastructure. Most of it is rural under road drains or connector pipes. Very few engineered structures. It's really mostly to convey the water off of the canyon roads and into a hillside or into a gully. There's a lot of geologic hazards there. There's highly clay soil with low permeability. We're further challenged by about 12 miles on the western end of the city. That's an area of special biological significance that we've been complying with for the state. There's an absolute prohibition on any dry weather discharges, so we've been ahead of the game on eliminating discharges on at least 50% of the coastline. And then we only have one officially defined groundwater basin. It's the Malibu Valley Groundwater Basin that was in that small saddle at the base of Malibu Creek watershed, where it's bound on one side by the Pacific Ocean, and all the remaining sides are non-water-bearing tertiary rocks. So essentially the water goes in and it drains out through Malibu Creek eventually. There's no actual basins that we could put water back into and save it for reuse. Slide. So on our eWIMP, we received approximately 67 combined comments back from the regional board. They were primarily questions that wanted us to add some additional clarifications or to add some corrections to footnotes, corrections to tables. I've summarized some of the more important comments on this slide. We did, several of the comments from the regional board included some clarifications about the area of special biological significance, what our requirements were for that, what some of the additional measures that we were doing for the ASBS, and integrate in the compliance plan, because we did have an ASBS compliance plan that was submitted to the State Water Resources Control Board. So we've incorporated all of those comments. We were also asked to provide some additional project milestones and then clarify on some of our source assessment studies that were referred to in the document. We elaborated on the language on how that related back to us addressing areas that were priorities and what the importance of those studies were to our EWIM. We also included a table that detailed all of the MS4 outfalls within the EWIM area, their sizes, and we also included into the sub-watershed descriptions within the EWIM document itself a note whether there existed a major outfall or not. Overall, we only had 9 major outfalls in this area. As I said, most of the outfalls are minor ones, but we're still addressing those just the same. We also, one of the general clarifications and additions that we did was we did an extensive review of what our minimum control measure costs have been over the past, I believe it was a 4-year period. So there was a table added in that expanded on the costs that the county has had and the city of Malibu has had for our minimum control measures. So that was a major addition. And we further clarified information in our MCM table for items that were enhancements or items that we were implementing as they're stated in the comment. Into that table, we also added in different institutional and structural types of BMPs that we'll be doing as part of our ASBS compliance plan. We did submit a revised EWIM to the regional board on January 19th, and that was following a December 7th meeting with regional board staff where we got further clarification and made sure that we were on target to adequately address their comments. This is just a slide that highlights the TMDLs and other priorities that we do have within this watershed. By far, the most important driving TMDL is the bacteria TMDLs for the Santa Monica Bay as well as the Malibu Creek watershed. So that has been one of the primary pollutants that we're focusing on to make sure that we stay on schedule to meet all of our compliance deadlines. Next slide. This slide is just a summary to point out that we have been very active in this region in implementing projects early on, well before the adoption of this 2012 permit. We were, in a sense, a testing ground for some of the bacteria TMDLs, so they were some of the earliest ones adopted in the region. And both the Flood Control District, the County of Los Angeles, and the City of Malibu have all been working together for a long time in this region to make sure that we are protecting water quality. So some examples of existing projects are the Curtis Cove Treatment Facility, the Marie Canyon Treatment Facility, the Legacy Park and Civic Center Stormwater Treatment Facility that's in the Malibu Creek region, which was recently one of our early action items for the EWIM to upgrade the size of the pumps and increase the capacity that could be treated through that facility. We've also installed a Broad Beach Road biofiltration project, which is essentially a green street, as well as the Wildlife Road biofiltration project, also a green street, that included a little bit more infiltration and had an ASBS outreach component throughout the entire area tributary to the ASBS. We've done a Los Flores Creek restoration project that included the development of a park where we added in more swales to capture additional roadway runoff and biofilter that. And we have Trichus Canyon Park, which has a large size detention area and specifically a dog park area that won't contribute runoff to any of the watershed. An important thing to note on, I believe, all but maybe one of these projects is that we sought grant funding. We've had wonderful support from the state in obtaining grants from various state agencies, including Wildlife Conservation Board, State Water Resources Control Board, Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. We have a long history of seeking funding to make sure we get our projects done, and we'll continue to do so. Next slide. An example of a project moving forward is the View Ridge Super Green Street project that the County of Los Angeles is doing. This is up toward the top of Topanga Canyon. This project is designed to treat a storm from 81 acres. The runoff in it will be used for irrigation. It incorporates passive recreation, and the county has applied for a $500,000 Proposition 1 grant. So that project is already in process and moving forward. Next slide. Additionally, we have the Winter Canyon Biofiltration Project, the City of Malibu has taken the lead on. This project will treat a design storm from 55 acres. It's going to be using biofiltration, and we've already applied for a $1.5 million Proposition 84 grant just this past January. That image in the center is from our Broad Beach Road biofiltration project, so we'll be doing similar Green Streets elements in Winter Canyon Civic Center area that we did on Broad Beach. The image on the left isn't coming up as clearly, but those are the inlets that will be captured as part of the biofiltration. So that's it in summary. As I mentioned, all of our agencies have been working together very closely for years. We've had a very successful track record of implementing robust projects, and we are all looking forward to working together to continue to implement the EWIM and bring in any additional partners that may be interested. Currently, it's only
Flood Control District, LA County, and City of Malibu. So there's not as many agencies to wrangle in that area, but we have reached out to Pepperdine University and have a series of meetings with them. We've spoken to state parks in the past, national parks, and Caltrans, and we're keeping those conversations open, but as of now, we're just a small group. Thank you very much.
Okay, Palos Verdes Peninsula, next up, and after that, so I don't keep jumping up and down, is going to be the Rio Hondo San Gabriel River Waterfall group. So if you guys can just be ready as soon as there's any presentation.
Good morning, everyone. As I can see, this is Heights Challenge. I recognize a lot of faces out there. Myself, John Hunter, for those of you that don't know me, and Nikki Klee will be presenting a very brief outline of the actions we've taken for the Palos Verdes Peninsula eWIMP group. The Palos Verdes Peninsula has had a long history of working together, so it was just natural that the group came together for that. And with that very brief introduction, I'll turn it over to Mickey for a little bit of more technical detail.
I have a very different height problem. Good afternoon. My name is Mickey Klee with John L. Hunter & Associates, here to represent the Peninsula eWIMP Watershed Management Plan. Next slide. As you know, the Peninsula, along with all other eWIMP groups, have been working diligently for years to develop the best plan possible. In June 2013, a notice of intent was submitted. In June 2014, an eWIMP work plan was submitted. In June 2015, the draft eWIMP was submitted. On October 26, 2015, the regional board provided comments on that draft eWIMP, and our revised eWIMP was provided January 25th, 2016. I'd like to briefly go over some of the highlighted changes to the eWIMP as a result of those comments. Most of the comments to the Peninsula eWIMP were involved requests for additional information. A new appendix was added to describe the VMP selection process. Interim milestones and implementation dates were expanded for clarity, and multiple benefits were added to each BMP. Also, additional information was added for TMDL compliance. The financial strategy was expanded, and changes to the RIA were made as requested. Another important item to discuss is that the Peninsula was very fortunate to have a resubmittal date that was after the Stormwater Resource Plan checklist and self-certification for the Prop 1 grant was received. And so the Peninsula group was able to proactively move forward in addressing the checklist in the eWIMP. And the group is hopeful that this will allow for a higher potential to receive grant monies under Prop 1 in the future. And projects, of course, are the most important aspect of the eWIMP. Currently, the Peninsula has three projects that have been complete, one project that's in construction, and one project that is in the design phase. And the Peninsula is also actively moving forward in further implementation, including correspondence and discussions regarding collaborations with agencies that are outside of the Peninsula. These potential opportunities would allow for the Peninsula group to address some of the difficult problems that the Peninsula faces with infiltration and feasibility and stringent phosphorus goals. And so the Peninsula is not waiting for approval of this plan to move forward in implementation. As indicated earlier, success has already been achieved with regional BMPs and early action projects. The Peninsula is committed and ready to be creative in finding funding, and we look forward to receiving the regional board's approval. Again, I thank you for your time.
Okay.
Is the Rio Hondo San Gabriel group here? Here you are. I'm sorry, I'm not rushing you. Sure.
Good morning. My name is James Carlson. I'm with the City of Sierra Madre, and today I'll be representing the Rio Hondo San Gabriel River Water Quality Group. And I'm here to talk about the final chapters in the production and submission of our EWIP. Next slide. Oh, okay. I'll wait for it. No, that's fine. I'll just do it without. I'm going nice and quickly that way. Real quick, we submitted our draft to UM on June 29th of 2015. We received actually 43 comments, and that was received on October 30th. These comments were authored by Deborah Brandis of the Regional Board staff. I want to commend her for actually putting a lot of thought and putting a lot of effort into some quality comments. We really appreciated what she did for us. At first step, the group met, and we went over these comments, and that was in November. Then we asked our consultant, CWE, to come in and give us a little bit more explanation on some things maybe we were unclear about. The next step after that was the group met with our consultant, CWE, and regional board staff, and we really generally came together on all 43 comments. Like you've heard before, a lot of the comments were pretty general. Maybe an additional map or an additional table was asked for, more clarification or more information, just like you've been hearing. The group then took one additional step, and we told our consultants to go ahead and prepare the final for submission. We were very confident with it, but our extra step was a little bit unique. We have what we call an oversight committee. And that's comprised of city managers, public works officials, engineers, and some of the management levels of the LA County. We had them together, and we also had elected officials from Sierra Madre, Bradbury, and Monrovia, and we were fortunate enough to have regional board staff members, including Deb Smith, Ivar Ridgway, Aram Razik, and again, Deborah Brandis, the author of our comments. A very nice meeting, and then on January 29th of 2016, we submitted our comments, or our final EWIP. Just real quick example of the comments that we went through and were able to figure out rather quickly. They wanted additional measures to address bacteria on the San Gabriel Riverside. Implementation schedules for Peck Lake TMDL, being that it's a US EPA TMDL. Identification of lead agencies for regional projects, and then finally a little bit more criteria on how we came up with the rating and prioritization for our regional projects. We haven't been in front of the regional board a whole lot, so I want to just go over real quickly. We are comprised of the cities of Sierra Madre, Arcadia, Monrovia, Bradbury, Duarte, Azusa, and many little pockets of county. We are a small EWIMP. We are comprised of small cities. And unlike, I think, the five previous presentations you've had, which are centered around the beach communities, we're actually up at the very top of the watersheds. We're also very unique in that we incorporate two watersheds into our EWIMP, the Rio Hondo, as well as the very upper San Gabriel first portion. And a lot of that and why we got together is because we have similar geography, we have similar land uses, similar situations, and we've worked together before on a number of other things. Our communities get along really great. I want to talk a little bit about that magical meeting we had with the Oversight Committee, the elected officials, and the regional board staff. We had a big slide of our whole group, and that pretty much is all we had up there, our whole map. All of our regional projects, where our tributaries were and everything. We talked about some hypotheticals such as, what if one of our regional projects has a problem with CEQA? How is the adaptive management process going to work so that we can make our adjustments, submit it to the executive director for approval, and continue on with our programs? We also wanted to point out that the topic of who takes a lead for a regional project. It would be jurisdictional. It makes a lot of sense to do that. But we pointed out one of our favorite projects actually includes the Arboretum, which is owned by the county and in the city of Arcadia, and also can take flow from Sierra Madre. Another situation we wanted to point out was we have a Royal Oaks Path, which is actually the very border top of Duarte, but it collects all of Bradbury's, but it's in Duarte. Top on that, it's owned by railroad companies. So we're going to have to work through a lot of that. It was nice for to be able to explain to them some of the challenges where we are going forward. They also wanted to talk a little bit, and this came from the elected and the managers a little bit, about doing a regional project more at the confluence of the Peck Lake area, because we would be getting some of the Santa Anita and some of the saw pits flows in there. We had a very healthy discussion on how that, although that's not disallowed, it doesn't necessarily address the receiving water qualities upstream. So that was very good. And again, as a result of this very productive meeting, we were all encouraged and we were confident when we submitted our EWIM at the end of January. Going forward, we're going quickly with our monitoring. We're having another monitoring event this weekend. We're going to have an in-depth discussion with our monitoring implementation in about 10 days. We are pursuing all the funding strategies. We're looking for creative ways. We're talking to our stakeholders in our communities to see if there's any partnerships that can be done. And we do want to thank regional board staff for providing some hints at that meeting as well. We're also starting to refine our public outreach. And, in the past, in the previous permit, we kind of would piggyback on some of the county stuff, and that was wonderful. But we've decided that being at the top of the watershed, a lot of our public doesn't realize that what they do at the top might not even get to the beach, but we need to clean the whole watershed along the way, okay? So that's something where we're going to try to tailor a little bit and be unique with. We're looking forward to the regional board approval of our EWIMP in April of 2016, in which we'll start our implementation phase. We're going to start paying attention on the development of the next permit. We're always going to keep our eyes open for future workshop assistance like this. And again, any future opportunities to coordinate with the regional board staff and the group is going to be sought. We had a wonderful time. That's the conclusion of my presentation, and I thank you.
All right, so next up we have Upper San Gabriel. And yes, you might have, I don't know if you noticed, we did try to somewhat group EWIMPs geographically, so we are moving into the San Gabriel. And then following the presentation by Upper San Gabriel, we will have a presentation by Upper Santa Clara moving to the west.
Hello, good morning. Thank you to the board for being here and for the regional board staff for having us here today. My name is Genevieve Lothmania, and I'm with the Los Angeles County Department of Public Works, and I'm here to speak today on behalf of the Upper San Gabriel River EWIMP. Next slide. Our group is located in the Upper San Gabriel River watershed on the east side of LA County, and we are made up of the eight agencies. Cities which are listed here are shown here on the map. As well as the county and incorporated areas and the LA County flood control district. Next slide. So we have a very similar table. There's been some very good overview of the regional board comments that were received by both Renee and the other group, so I won't go into too much detail for our table. But as soon as we got our comments back in October, we jumped right on trying to address them as quickly as we could. We did, again, for the most part, we had many comments that were fairly easy and straightforward, and were able to incorporate them no problem. We also had our handful of comments that we did want some extra clarification and guidance on, and we did meet with the regional board staff also in early October. To kind of discuss and make sure we understood the comments they got, the board's expectations, and where we could, we tried to outline what our planned approach was for addressing those comments to make sure we were on the right track in addressing them. And as a result of that meeting, I got a lot of good feedback from staff, and we do feel pretty good that the revised EWIMP submitted at the end of January addressed all the regional work comments to the best of our ability. So again, I'm not going to go through each of these, but I did want to highlight one item, the Green Street Project, the comment that we got for the Green Street Project. Because for our area, that it did turn out that's going to be a significant area that we're going to have to work on, and it's going to be challenging for us to work and identify projects as well as the funding to work on getting projects to help us meet the volumes in that area. So the comment that we got did ask for some additional timeline and more specific details on the steps that our group and the agencies in our group plan to do in moving towards completing Green Streets. And so what we did is we did add timelines, and we added, we really sat down with our agencies and had some serious conversations about what our agencies would be willing to do. And we hope we came up with a pretty good list of various things and efforts, like creating a Green Street master plan, developing or updating, or both developing and updating a Green Street design guidelines, and that even aligning those and incorporating those into existing road capital improvement plans to make sure, you know, we try to be efficient and work on areas that were already, you know, in the plans and works we work on already. So, you know, before leaving the slide, I guess I also do want to mention, along with our submittal, we also did provide a pretty detailed response to comments matrix table where we included the comments, the description of how we addressed it, and a reference to the section MD of document where you can see the change addressed or incorporated. So hopefully that facilitates, you know, the review process and the revised email. Next slide. Okay, so jumping from the review comments straight to some of our ongoing actions that we're starting to work on. I wanted to kind of highlight a potential project in our area that will hopefully gain some momentum in our Ewens area. The City of La Puente and the Bassett Unified School District have been coordinating and have been having some preliminary meetings with stakeholders about a potential project at the high school to improve the campus and enhance its presence in the community by adding things like a walking trail, some additional trees, permeable pavement, and bioswales. And there's also been some positive discussions about adding some additional stormwater components with the infiltration galleries beneath the ball fields. There's also a potential for multiple project partners on this project, including the county and the City of West Covina. So we're keeping those discussions open. And it's still very early in the process, and no formal agreements have really been made yet. But we are hoping to coordinate and do some soils testing at the site soon. And the concepts that are out right now for this site, they really convey what would be a really good multi-benefit project and what we think would be a good example of collaboration between all these agencies, including the school. Also, just one note on this one, I wanted to kind of mention that this was actually not a highlight or signature project in our EWIM. We were not actually aware of this opportunity at the time when our EWIM was submitted, so this might be one of the early examples of where we really try to utilize the flexible and adaptive nature of the EWIM, and we'll work with Regional Board staff to make sure that if this you know, gets developed further, that we can really prove and qualify that this is an equal and equivalent, and maybe even better project to help us with our plan. Next slide. So just quickly, this one was just to highlight, you know, in parallel with looking for the big regional projects, we're already, we're continuing our implementation of our MCMs. And we're a handful of our agencies are also working on doing some enhancements to our control measures. A handful of our agencies have already committed to updating our sweepers and our street sweeping program, installing full capture systems in our catch basins at a faster or more expedited rate than what's in the current trash policy, and also developing some outreach and incentive programs for our residents, like rainbow programs. Next slide. And then this final slide is, like many of the groups, we're out there looking for as many grant opportunities as we can. Two of our agencies were able to submit applications for the RMC Prop 1 grant opportunity that was opened last year. So just to highlight, City of Glendora was able to submit an application for a project where they're proposing to infiltrate stormwater in two of their publicly owned properties in their downtown area. And then the county was able to find a potential Green Street opportunity. And this is actually another example of where we're trying to align some of our projects in the Ewing with existing planned projects. This is a road improvement project that came our way, and we saw some opportunities in a median in a portion of the project where we figured, you know, if we're already going to be doing construction in that area, if the feasibility for stormwater infiltration is there, we, you know, that looks like a very good opportunity to maybe capture stormwater. So those two applications went in earlier this year, and I believe hopefully we'll hear back on the awarded projects by end of March. And moving forward, our group is we're continuing to meet every month, even though the events are in and still being reviewed. We're collaborating together on the huge monitoring effort that has been underway for some time now. And we'll look for, hopefully find some good opportunities to apply for the upcoming Prop 1 grant opportunities as well.
All right, Upper Santa Clara River Ewing. And then after that, we're going to have a presentation by Paradigm Environmental to cover some of their reasonable assurance analysis comments and revisions that were made for several of the Ewing groups.
Good morning, everybody. I wanted to take a moment of my time. My presentation is going to be quite short, but I wanted to take a moment to recognize the unprecedented effort that all of these events and all of this effort has resulted in. I've been a stormwater practitioner since the first NPDES permit, and I've never seen the level of seriousness, the level of commitment, and the level of analysis that I have seen over the last 2 years. And so I think we all deserve a round of applause to ourselves and some acclaim for the hard work that all of us have put in, stakeholders, consultants, county, city agencies, and the state. So thank you, everybody, for taking this really seriously and doing a good job. So... So I get my pretty shot. Everyone has to have their pretty shot. So there's my pretty shot. If I get the next slide, please. So again, geographically, we are, Kern County is to our far north, Ventura County to our far west. Lake Elizabeth is that small little patch in the very tippy top that's kind of disconnected in our Ewing, but is controlled by the county. And then the blue is unincorporated county, and the sort of the dark highlighted is the city of Santa Cruz city limits. This is areas Castaic, Stevenson's Ranch, West Ranch, Agua Dulce, Acton. Angeles National Forest is in most of the watershed areas that are highlighted above and below. It's 121,000 acres, and it is over 90% open space in our watershed, so we don't have much urbanization similar to the Malibu. So I'm just going to focus on some very high-level revisions. We do have a response to comments in our document and an appendix. So we do a table, so it's pretty clear. But we've already had a second revised. So we submitted it in June. We were the first ones required, so we got our revised in January 4th, and we've been working collaboratively with the Region Board staff and responded to their comments, so we've already had a re-revised version, which the Region Board staff quickly got on the website. It was amazingly quick. So the re-revised version is up there already. I'm donating the rest of my time to Dustin's great Tell Me More speech. I'm expecting later. All right, next slide. So one of our key revisions is that, as you saw, Ventura County makes up the lower half of our watershed, but they're under a different permit. But they have done a lot of land use monitoring through outfall monitoring that we didn't have. So Region Board staff asked us to look at what they had in the lower watershed, that would be Oxnard, Ventura, Santa Paula, and Fillmore, and look at what the results were from their outfalls. That's the lovely Santa Paula outfall. Very dry. And we did look at it. We evaluated the data. It didn't change anything. It's not really, it's in it. There's a lot more agriculture in that neck of the woods, so it was more agriculturally dominated. But we did look at it and evaluate it, but it really didn't change the outcome of our list of things. We were asked for clarification for the more the priority two, level two receiving water considerations and to incorporate the Lake Elizabeth trash DMDL. So if you could do the next slide, please. This is before, and this is what we did after. So Lake Elizabeth is included. There is a lot of footnotes describing the actual permit permission that we're responding to and why we prioritize the different pollutants the way we did. Next slide, please. We had comments about MCMs. We included many interim milestones, some of which when we started looking at it, we realized we had already completed. So we were able to put complete and a lot of our interim milestones are already done. We needed to revise our public education table to demonstrate what pollutants we expected to be reducing by our education activities. And we were asked to provide more details about how we were prioritizing our institutional inspection program and what we were doing with that. So we did respond to all of those and made changes. And then I think the biggest one, I think this is one that Renee has already covered, we were asked to justify our 2035 milestone. The bacteria TMDL for the Upper Santa Clara River is completed in 2029. We felt that what we needed is 2 to 3 years to evaluate the pollutant loading after we attributed everything that we needed to for bacteria. So bacteria is covered by everything we're doing. And when we cover for bacteria, we cover for all the metals, for the copper and the zinc that we need to, with the exception of one small geographic area in our South Fork. So in the South Fork, in that very narrow area, we need more time after we've implemented all of the regional BMPs and institutional BMPs and everything we need to do. We need 2 or 3 years of monitoring data in that area to determine whether or not we are actually violating still, and maybe our modeling is off because we don't have a lot of monitoring data for the South Fork. And then, so we do need a couple of years, 3 years of monitoring data to see where we're at. And then once we know where the problems are, if they still persist, we will need time to determine the projects, fund them, plan for them, design them, and build them. So based on that estimate, the earliest we could do is 6 years after the end of the bacteria campaign. And that's, it's conservative. We think we need more like 8 years. But we shaved 2 years off. That's as soon as possible. If we're running a breakneck speed, that's as soon as we can. And there's our last monitor. That's the 1-inch storm in Santa Clara. And I'll take any questions after the presentation. Thanks.
Okay, board member Singular, Sam, Renee, staff, thanks for having me. I'm Dustin Bambick. I'm a director and professional hydrologist with Paradigm Environmental. And luckily, we have saved the easy stuff for last. I'm going to cover 6 RAAs, and those RAAs, next slide, for the EWIMPs are shown in this map. You can see that this is a big coverage area for LA County, kind of. And includes the Upper LA River, Upper San Gabriel River, Upper Santa Clara River, Malibu Creek, Biona Creek, and then since the last time we've added Dominguez Channel, we're happy to help carry that EWIMP and that RAA across the finish line as well. So today I'm going to do a quick recap of the RAA and then just focus on 2 key topics. There were a lot of comments. The RAA folks, we got a whole special appendix of comments that we had the joy to go through. and modify the EUMs, and I'm just going to focus on kind of two major ones. Thank you, Dr. Black. They've done great. You guys, I mean, we create these huge appendices, and they read every single page and footnote, and the amount of review really is impressive. So I'm going to do a recap of the REA in two slides. So we're really trying to boil this down. The first part of the recap is that these REAs, you can go to the next slide, are based on the Watershed Management Modeling System, which has really two models within it. The first is LSPC, which covers the watershed modeling. We use it to do the baseline conditions and the required reductions. And then that feeds into a second model called SUSTAIN, which is also an EPA model that helps simulate the performance of the BMPs and also help the groups select the BMP. With those models, we developed what we call EWIMP implementation strategies. And so here is an example from the upper LA River, the biggest of our REAs, which includes, there's something like 18 agencies up there, and each agency gets its unique combination of LID, green bars, green streets, blue bars, and regional BMPs, orange bars, and the height of the bar is how much storage there is within those BMPs combined across the city. So there's your recap, and now I'm going to dig into two key comments. Go ahead. First one is the comparison to REA guidelines, and this is a lot about the baseline model, the calibrations. And here's an example from the Malibu Creek EWIMP, where there was a very detailed calibration, where basically the upper left chart is where we're comparing the simulated flows and concentrations to those that were observed by the flow gauges. These calibration efforts, the key part of the regional board's review is the calibration guidelines that we had to meet. So if you go to the next slide, this really is the only time that we've ever had to meet calibration criteria. We do EPA TMDLs, we don't have to meet calibration criteria. We do state board TMDLs, we don't have to meet calibration criteria. But for these RIAs, we have to meet very detailed calibration criteria. And in fact, for the board staff, they looked at these criteria and said, hey, fair is not good enough. We need good at a minimum. And so in cases that we had fair, and I'll show an example on the next slide, not to pick on Upper LA River, but if you look across a whole bunch of flow gauges, a hydrology calibration, you see lots of very goods and goods, and for every single gauge, we at least had a very good or a good with one of the metrics. But when we had a fair, the groups committed to collecting additional data so that the calibration could be improved in the future. So examples for the next slide include, of course, the monitoring data from the SIMPs. Our modelers are really excited to get that data. There's other programs, including the POTWs, and then the dams are a big part of the hydrology, the impoundments that release flows, and we can continue to gather that data as well. The second key topic is a demonstration, calling it a validation demonstration, where we were asked to provide more outputs, more clarification, more demonstration that these plans are going to work. And so I think last time some of you might remember the approach that we've used to identify the critical conditions. You can push the buttons two more times. Where really we we did use a modeling approach that focused on the volume of stormwater that is exceeding the pollutant limits, the receiving water limits. And by doing that, we are able to identify the key size that the BMPs need to be, and we're also boiling down the EWIMPs into volumes, which is key if you're going to collaborate with water agencies. They don't talk in terms of loads. They talk in terms of volumes. So what we heard from board staff was, that's elegant, but show me more. Demonstrate more that this indeed is going to be protected. And so we have a couple slides on that. Here's a slide where we use the 90th percentile exceedance volume. That's the gray bars. There are a couple other 90th percentile metrics in the blue and orange bars. And in this case, the gray bars being higher is good. It means we are more protective than even was required by the REA guidelines. The next slide, we were also asked to provide a whole bunch of outputs that show the conditions before and after the BMPs are implemented, after the EWIMP is in place. Here's an example from Dominguez Channel where we simulate the discharge of pollutants from the MS4 into the receiving waters before and after, and on the far right you see a total load reduction, in that case for zinc. What we heard from board staff is that's great. That is one thing that we were looking for. We also like to see time series of concentrations in the creek after the BMPs are implemented. And we said, okay, we usually don't need to do that because we solve on the front end, not the back end. And board staff said, in fact, you've never done that, and no one has ever done that. And basically what we heard back was, well, good luck to you. And so we did it. We identified a very tough, we identified one very challenging watershed within the region, Quincy Creek, which basically has hardly any open space. It's really impervious, and used it as a demonstration where we basically routed outputs from the watershed model into the BMP model, sustained, and then back into LSPC to get time series of in-stream concentrations. Next slide. And here is kind of the key output where you have zinc concentration on the y-axis. You have the percentiles along the x-axis. And what we're focusing in that top upper panel is the 90th percentile condition, where the blue line, pre-EWIMP, was above the zinc limit, but the orange line, post-EWIMP, is below the zinc limit, which demonstrates, using the modeling, that you'll achieve that zinc limit over 90% of the time in the creek. Okay? So to wrap up, next slide. We do modeling all over. These are by far the most advanced stormwater modeling efforts that have been conducted here, and really we think anywhere on the curve. And the review by board staff, like I said, really was comprehensive. Kudos to them. There were a lot of additional outputs that we provided, more commitments by the groups to collect additional data, and we even did some stuff that's never really been done before. And then finally, really, we look forward into moving into EWIMP implementation, so using these same tools to help with the planning of the BMPs and the implementation itself. That's it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Dustin. So next up, Mr. Tahir.
Okay. Okay, my name's Ray Pierre, as you probably know. I'm here to, unfortunately, reapply the ointment with respect to the ewin. And one of the reasons why is that these ewin costs are insane. And here they are right here. I mean, all told, we're looking at $20 billion over a 15 to 20 year period. I'm sure all of you have seen these numbers before and are quite startled by them. And so why are the costs so insane? Well, this is one of my favorites, City of Omega, which was referenced earlier. It's less than 2 square miles in area. And yet, they got to come up with $58.4 million by 2019. And unfortunately, Lomita is incorrectly lumped in with the Dominguez Channel Ewin Group. But according to the MS4 permit, Lomita is assigned to Machado Lake, not the Dominguez Channel. And that's probably one of the reasons why it costs so much more for them to comply with the Ewin. Another reason why these costs are so out of line is that TMDLs are mislisted. For the Rio Hondo San Gabriel River Ewin group, or the Ewin itself refers to Reach 3 of the Rio Hondo. But there is no such thing as Reach 3 of the Rio Hondo. There's only Reach 1 and Reach 2 of the Rio Hondo. Since it's going to pass cost, Ewin needs to be revised or eliminated. Beyond this, TMDLs are exaggerated or are false. Several TMDLs are really not TMDLs. Because they're not on the state's DOPD list, which identifies TMDLs. So if the TMDL ain't on the 303D list, it ain't a TMDL. This affects a number of cities in that group, Sierra Madre, Bradbury, Monrovia, et al. Beyond that, you know, Reach 2 is not subject for either trash or for any of the metals. I think what happened was that there was some confusion between Reach 1 and Reach 2. Reach 1 is subject to metals and trash, but not Reach 2. And the reason for that, I believe, is because all those cities in that water quality segment drain upstream and spray. Same thing for Reach 1 and Reach 2 in the Rio Seco. South Pasadena and La Cañada are not 303D listed for metals. Also, Reach 1, 2, and 3 of the San Gabriel River are not listed for copper, yet it is still subject to this TMDL. The TMDLs are also defective. They're based on wet weather instead of ambient dry weather standards. Basing TMDLs and water quality standards on ambient conditions is specified in the Clean Water Act toxic. And it's also suggested in State Board Order 2001-15, which says there is no such thing as a wet weather standard in federal law. Another issue, another reason why the costs are so great, is that the TMDL compliance is based on both outfall monitoring and receipt water monitoring, which is really only based on outfall monitoring. And this is specified in the Code of Federal Regulations. Complying with wet weather and receiving water is much more difficult than complying with outfall for obvious reasons, because when it rains and you have a river or a channel flowing, it's a very tumultuous and chaotic time for a river. And this is, you know, the worst time that you should take a sample, because you're probably going to rain. Meeting receiving water TMDLs also requires more treatment and or diversion of runoff away from rivers and channels, requiring more water to be infiltrated to the ground. This obviously costs more money, lots of money. The MS4 plan also requires compliance in both the outfall and the receiving water. It also requires monitoring at the outfall and the receiving water. Once again, federal regulations only require compliance at the outfall. Again, receiving water is much more difficult to comply with. It requires more water to infiltrate, which requires more control over water. The permit also requires non-stormwater discharges to comply with TMDLs, which federal regulations only require non-stormwater discharges to be prohibited or to be covered under a separate discharge. This requirement obviously adds to the problem. The permit also requires strict compliance with numeric GMPLs through effluent limitations at the outfall. The Ninth Circuit did away with this requirement. It said that the permitting agency, the regional board of state plans, is not required to comply with effluent limitations to meet water quality standards. It can meet water quality standards and GMPLs through BMPs to the maximum extent practical. This means the iterative process, according to state board quality orders and state board policy. The regional board, unfortunately, took away or at least obscured the availability of the SWIFT and the iterative process as a compliance determination. This is being challenged in litigation. Excessive monitoring. Another cost factor. The permit requires testing for TMDLs and other water quality standards and municipal action. Well, I'm wondering, why do you need to do both? You really only require, it's either one or the other. And once again, there's an excessive wet weather monitoring. Compliance should be determined at the end. We don't understand why you need additional monitoring stations in the receiving water. They really don't do anything to determine whether or not a water body, particularly when it's ephemeral as a river, which only fills up when it rains, what adverse impacts will it have on beneficial use of basically a flood control. The LS4 permit requires LA and San Gabriel River communities to do monitoring related to the Dominguez Channel carbon toxic steam dump, which I never could fully understand. There are two, and the Dominguez Channel watershed is separate from the LA and the San Gabriel River watershed. But for some reason, there's a belief that municipalities that discharge into the LA River and the San Gabriel River somehow impair the Dominguez Channel and the harbors, the LA and the Long Beach Harbor. Again, they're different watersheds that are subject to different TMDLs. Several cities in the LA and San Gabriel River that are above the spreading routes would never impact the harbors, yet they're still subject. So why is that? And beyond that, the San Gabriel River is several miles away from the harbors. It flows into Seal Beach, not the Long Beach Harbor. I should also point out that there is a disparity between the LA MS4 permit and other MS4 permits in the state. But the most poignant disparity is between LA and North Orange County. It's an example how the LA permit is very, very different. The several cities subject to the North Orange County permit are subject to the same TMDL as cities in LA County. Example, the Metals for Coyote Creek applies to, for example, the city of Cerritos, which is, as you know, in L.A. County. And it also applies to La Palma, which is in North Orange County. Well, Cerritos and La Palma are stones throw away. Yet, Cerritos must comply through a costly WIMP. La Palma only needs to implement a stormwater management program, as a drainage area management program, which consists of the same basic program that all MS4s in the state have to implement. As a result of La Palma only having to comply with the SWIFT and the other process, their compliance costs are significantly lower. Yeah. Why is there such a great difference? The same water quality issues, and North Orange County is also experiencing a drought. So what's the answer? Yes, Sam. So the solution to hopefully would be for the state board to stay or temporarily void the MS4 permit pending resolution of that litigation. Should also begin work on correcting the TMDLs to be in keeping with federal law, US EPA guidance, and state board orders. And work on an interim process for performance benchmark similar to the one for Orange County. And here it is right here. This came out of EPA Region 3. And here's what it says. Operators of regulated MS4s are required to develop a stormwater management plan, which I mentioned earlier. That includes measurable goals and implement needed stormwater controls, BMPs.
process of developing a plan, implementing the plan, and evaluating the plan is a dynamic iterative process that helps move communities towards the achievement of the goals. In other words, you don't have to strictly comply with numeric targets by a certain specified period. You're given time to gradually meet those targets through this iterative process. Identify the problem, come up with a plan to address that problem, evaluate that problem using monitoring, and if the problem continues to exist, then you have to modify your plan. And that is an ongoing process. And it's basically the norm, not just for Orange County, but for every MS4 in the state, and indeed, I believe, for every MS4 in the country, especially those where US EPA issues the MS4 permit. And with that, I thank you very much for your attention and your patience.
All right, so next we have two speaker cards. So first, Ms. Joyce Diller. And the speakers will have 3 minutes each.
I'm a citizen who's learned this by years of attending meetings and reading and reading a lot of reports and things like that, so I may not have the expertise that some of you guys have. But certainly, I'm from the city of L.A., so I basically watch that, spend most of my time watching that region, which really controls the whole area. The financial strategies aren't going to work, mainly because the cities have to disclose their pension debt now. And in the city of L.A., it's in the billions. There's a general accounting standard board that issues guidelines for the cities and state governments, and those guidelines are going into effect. It'll kill this out completely. They're not going to be able to afford this, even at the smallest level. Then. Unfortunately, the aspects of this permit is not in those GASB standards now. GASB. And they need to be. And part of the problem is you have MOUs. And those aren't required to disclose. And if this was to ever work, there would have to be disclosure early on so the elected officials can understand how to plan for this in budget. And that's not happening. Now, where can you get the citizen involved? The stormwater resource plan that's involved citizen participation, there's been almost none in this permit. And I don't see really the incorporation of that stormwater resource plan. And I've been at the state meetings on Prop 1, and it really doesn't fit in, and neither do the airlines. So we have a problem there. And I deal with other people active in watching their government, and this is a very difficult aspect to understand, but they do understand CEQA. And they do understand more of the general plans and things like that. Now, CEQA isn't being applied to any of this. And all of this was, the project in this was supposed to be CEQA-oriented. So far, I've seen a county, per PEIR, I've seen the city of L.A. issue a CEQA addendum. They're not the lead agency. They didn't go through the county for approval. I have seen few projects in the city of L.A. with CEQA on this. There's a recent LAX Northside plan. They did a CEQA addendum, even though their stormwater plans were talked about for years and negotiated and finally executed this year, but they acted like it was new and no one knew about it when it should have been circulated for public comment and understanding and put in mitigation and monitoring. When it's not in the CEQA document, you have no mitigation and monitoring. And unfortunately for big areas like the city of LA with a lot of development going on, all we're seeing is mitigated negative declarations and not EIRs. In all the documents I see, EIRs are mitigated negative decks. The stormwater management plans, one mentioned. Never this, maybe a lid ordinance. Nothing that can really be adapted ever to what this permit wants. And it's got to start locally, and it's got to start on the properties you're dealing with. On public property, what I've seen, and people are asking for grant money now, I'm seeing public property offered with exempt CEQA, no, only for landscaping, basically. Now they want stormwater, haven't done the public work on it. On public property, they're selling naming rights. You've got nonprofits involved selling naming rights with no authorization that I can find so far from the public agency to authorize that. We'll just finish it up. Your bonds are now dead. You cannot have private activity on public bonds. And so all these options for applying for funding just may be killed out by stupidity like that in the grant for money.
Okay, and our last speaker, Mr. Rex Frankel, for 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be able to address you rather than wait 7 hours like the last public workshop you had. My comments concern the Bionic Creek eWIMP exclusively. Our organization's website is, if you want to read more about this, lacreekparks.org. Bionic Creek is the most paved over watershed in Los Angeles. Most creeks are buried. This is not like the San Fernando Valley, San Gabriel Valley, Malibu, where you have concreted channels, but they're still there. The land is still public. We've got a much harder plan to fix. So anyways, thus the Bionic Creek eWIMP makes maximum use of existing public lands, but that's not enough. The eWIMP mentions buying 364 acres of private developed land to accomplish 52% of the plan goals. But some background information. In 2004, L.A. City's voters approved Proposition O, which promised the purchase of land to create parkways along the L.A. River and Bologna Creek. Yet largely, this proposition provided none. The money was diverted into pet projects of council members. The Water Board has stated previously that multi-benefit BMPs should use natural methods. If you want to find out, you can read Board Resolution 2006-006, page 6, first paragraph. Of the 10 signature regional projects in the Bionic Creek Plan, only one may have wetlands. The rest are not providing parks at all. They're just using parks for water facilities. Concrete infiltration tanks under parks are not natural. Green streets, it's a great euphemism, but it's not a park. It may accomplish an environmental goal, but it's not adding to the open space in the city. The Bionic Creek Plan will cost at least $2.7 billion or $4 billion, depending on which table you look at. There's no money, though, yet. What's interesting is your revised financial strategy is we hope the legislature guts Prop 218. I'm paraphrasing here. So you can tax us using what you euphemistically call, and this is what your direct quote is, an internal process to raise the money. Finally, you hope the State Water Board eliminates the need for private land acquisition for regional BMPs entirely, probably, by eliminating health standards during wet weather, another euphemism that you call high-flow suspension, on page 8.5. In the end, taxpayers face a massive construction windfall for engineering firms and the concrete pouring industry at massive costs, while the majority of pollution will still foul our beaches, as it mostly comes down during rainstorms. Taxpayers will not support this. Don't even think of trying to okay tax hikes and secrets, and if you plan on relaxing the health regulations, you're going to face a hell of a fight. Instead, give us an eWIMP with real, visible, natural benefits, and we will listen. What we propose is if you're going to acquire 364 acres of land, or at least you're dangling that you're going to acquire 364 acres of land, why don't you use that, buy some, such as 150 to 200 acres. We've actually put together a feasibility, a map of the property's potential to unbury Bologna Creek. The portion of Bologna Creek, that's the 10-mile inland portion of Bologna Creek, it's a great opportunity to create a connected park system in Los Angeles where you have none. Currently, Bologna Creek is a cul-de-sac ending at La Brea and Venice Boulevard. If you continue it from there all the way to Ferndale and Griffith Park, you're actually creating ultimately a 50-mile park circle in Los Angeles, whereupon people in most of Los Angeles are isolated from their park system. You'll actually create a connector that creates a potential for greenways, bikeways, walkways, and cleaning up the runoff in a substantial portion of the Bionic Creek watershed at an economical cost that is a real visible benefit that the taxpayers will vote for. Again, you're producing a lot of paper that the taxpayers are not going to pay for. If you want the public to pay for this project and for you to accomplish your goal, give us something we really want, which is new parks. Thank you.
Okay, so if nobody else filled out any speaker cards, that is the end of our presentations, and thank you to everybody for coming today and giving us very valuable comments and giving Sam, our executive officer, a chance to hear your comments and hear how you've responded to board staff's comments on the revised EWIMs. We do still have some time left, so the purpose now, everybody has heard a lot, we've heard a lot, but if there are specific things that you are interested in hearing more from us, the board staff, about, or even if you have questions for each other, then this is the opportunity to have some question and answers or some discussion. And I see two hands up over here. I would ask if you could, we have a microphone to the side that I think should be working. So if you don't mind speaking into that microphone, because it'll be difficult for people to hear you unless you do that, I think.
County Health, Department of Public Health just came out with some guidelines in February, and they play a role in this, in allowing it to even happen in the monitoring of it. And where, and since it's their new guidelines, so they're not in your EWIMs, and how are you applying those county guidelines to this? A lot of it can only be on public property or larger property. So how is that application of county, and would you also address vector control? Because that plays an issue.
Yeah, and I don't know, I may call you up, Ivar, to talk about some of the vector control issues. I'll start out. But, I mean, certainly vector control is something that we have considered, and I believe that permittees, we've had discussions with permittees on particular projects with regard to vector control and making sure that they and we are cognizant of those issues and concerns and making sure that projects are designed in such a way as to not cause vector control problems. In fact, we worked with some of the vector control districts when we were developing the permit, sought their input on some of the requirements and provisions of the permit to ensure that they were consistent with their requirements and weren't going to cause them concerns about introducing vector problems within the EWIMP areas.
What about the new county public health guidelines that just came out? Are you looking at those yet, or do you even know that they're out?
Can you tell me again specifically which ones you're speaking of?
It's a brand new document that was released in February that's on their website. Well, it's not the matrix.
Oh.
It's the second document since that one from a couple years ago. It's just monitoring.
Well, if you're talking about the new matrix document, the update that was recently completed, we are aware of that. We've been talking to the cities that have been working on that in the county. I personally have not gone through it in detail yet, but I have plans to look through it carefully and see the different guidelines that are in there and review those in the context of what we're doing through the WIMPs and the EWIMPs. Yes?
I have a question about green streets and the CEQA permits. I know that there's been a lot of emphasis placed on green streets as a means of complying with EWIM and water quality standards and being brought. But has there been an evaluation of green streets in terms of potential environmental impacts? Flooding is one of them. Restricting traffic is another one. And inadvertently allowing pollutants, say, from a vehicle wreck or a truck overturn, resulting in the spillage of those toxics into the substrates. And then there's the issue of maintenance. Now, at what point do you have to rip up the street in order to remove what's going to eventually result in is a thick layer of crud that has to be removed? So is there going to be a CEQA clearance for the green streets through the EWIMs at some point?
Well, we've heard some talk about, there was a programmatic CEQA document prepared for the EWIMs, but specifically, each of the projects that are within the EWIMs will have their own project-specific processes that they will go through. And so issues like that, as projects go through that implementation process, will have their own permitting and approval processes where things like that will be examined. And I certainly know that those are things that the permittees are thinking about and I mean, I welcome any permittees that would like to come up and talk about that, but I know, Ray, you're working with a number of permittees, also some of which are contemplating green streets as part of their strategy. So I think that those issues are ones that are being considered. Green streets have long been used, not as extensively as they're being proposed to be used now, but I certainly think that there's been a lot of experience across the country with green streets and considering those types of possible concerns and addressing them.
Well, I think it would be helpful if the EWIMPs would be guided into doing a more specific EIR to cover the green streets, because there are green streets and then there are green streets. And as you know here, in Southern California, we have a great deal of traffic. And the more traffic you have, the more pollutants you're going to have on the roadway. I mean, I don't think what you want to happen is what happened 10 or 15 years ago when the flavor, BFP flavor of the month, were these catch basin inserts. And everybody was putting them in order to reduce pollutants and runoff. Well, it was determined after a while that those catch basin inserts really don't work because they're easily compromised after one or two storm events. You know, the pores in the filters become clogged, and so they're no longer able to infiltrate. So instead of being mitigants of pollution, they become sources of pollution. All I'm suggesting is that you might want to give more thought to having a specific EIR review or requiring a specific EIR review for green streets.
Thanks for your comment. Mr. Frankel.
Yes. I can respond actually on the program EIR in relation to pollutants for green streets. The program EIR, because it was, it had no specific projects in it, it didn't analyze the environmental impacts of anything. It was basically empty paper when it comes down to it. It's deferring all analysis to the local agencies, and if those local agencies choose not to do CEQA analysis or mitigated negative declarations or whatever other minimal documentation, we may not know health risks, traffic risks, et cetera, from green streets. You know, I'm very concerned with parkways being converted into basins that hold urban runoff. You know, people falling into them, people playing in the grass in them. You know, is the grass that's in parkways absorbing pollution and becoming a pathway that for humans to come in contact with it? It wasn't analyzed in the report. If there's anybody that has an answer to that point, I'd like to hear it.
Not just going to touch on specifically on the EIR, but one thing I want to point out, for the green streets requirement that we had in the LA County permit and actually predated and started in the Ventura County MS4 permit, that was based on US EPA guidance. In areas like Prince George's County, Maryland, they've been doing LID green streets since the 1990s. So this isn't something new. You know, there's different designs that are, you know, outcoming now. But the basic green street provisions, they've dealt with the long highways and high traffic areas. So this isn't exactly brand new. It might be brand new to this region, but LID green streets have been around for a couple of decades. We're talking about going on 20 years at this point.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, my concern is just the health impacts of doing it on a massive basis. Individually, they may work in certain areas, but the fact is that it's certainly in the city of Los Angeles where it's being implemented on a massive basis, massive scale. It's one thing when a small city does it. It's a different thing when a city of 4 million people does it. It doesn't do an environmental impact report, doesn't have alternatives, it does minimal review of it. Anyways, I don't want to get on the soapbox on that. What I'm really more interested in is the process that's upcoming. Mr. Unger, you will be you're tasked with the responsibility of either approving or denying the plans. If they are approved, is there an appeal process, I assume, to the State Water Board?
Do you want me to respond to that? Okay. So the process that is laid out in the permit, there is a petition process, and that process begins with the regional board. Our executive officer, Sam Unger, is delegated to do the approvals of the EWIMPs through his delegated authority. And so he makes that decision, but it is possible for stakeholders, permittees, to petition that decision to the regional board. And then the regional board will consider how to address that petition. There is also the possibility that a stakeholder or permittee can petition to the state board. So there are both of those remedies at the regional board level as well as at the state board level.
So
and those are within, those have to be filed within 30 days of the decision by the executive officer.
So again, to clarify, for example, if I'm aggrieved, I can petition to Mr. Unger, and I can also petition to the state board.
You don't petition to our executive officer, you petition to the regional board.
Okay.
Itself.
All right. One final issue. I'm really wanting to see what the comments are from the public, and there were comments that were posted by the public with a comments deadline back in September of last year. Is there any intention to post public comments that are received, right now, for example? Because it'd be interesting to see what the public is having to say, as opposed to staff members of the water board receiving comments. You know, the public doesn't get to see them unless they're posted on your website. Can you post those that are received up to now or in the next few weeks on your website?
We have posted all of the public comments that we've received. As I described in the beginning of my presentation during this workshop, we had a public comment period on the draft enhanced watershed management programs, just like we did on the watershed management programs, and that lasted for a two-month period after receiving the drafts. And all the letters we received are posted on our website. And that was the public review process for written comments. Subsequent to that, as we talked about earlier today, we've had a series of workshops, this one being the third, where we've taken oral comments on both the draft EWIMPs as well as the revised EWIMPs. And so those comments are available in the case of the first two workshops. Those were at a regularly scheduled board meeting, which we have transcripts for. The meeting today actually is being recorded, so we will have an audio recording of the comments that we've received today.
So really, my question is, should I submit written comments now?
No, written comments...
Will you use them, or will they not be considered timely?
They wouldn't be considered timely, because the written comment period has already closed for the EWIMPs. So we're continuing to accept oral comments at these workshops, but the written comment period has already closed for that.
Okay, but if we have any concerns, we should still email them to you or to Ivar?
You can certainly, yes, I would encourage you to call us, and if you'd like to talk in more detail about your comments, that at this stage in the process, that's probably the best thing to do, rather than, emailing or anything like that, is just request a meeting with us to talk about them in more detail.
Thank you.
Ivar just answered something that concerns me about adaptive management. If you look at Green Street and say, oh, it's been done in another state, or LID, which I saw a presentation from Oregon, and you're here in the LA region, oil-rich, methane, very much of it non-monitored, as you can see in what happened in Porter Ranch, but it's happening in Fairfax and other parts of the city, oozing up from the ground. There's a special camera that catches that. Without an EIR, how can you say it's going to work? When you have to dewater for methane and you want water in the ground, you've got conflicting issues going on, and very much a public safety issue, including explosiveness. So EIRs, non-mitigated negative declarations, high groundwater aspects, faults. I live over a blind thrust, and I can feel the faults from other regions, including Santa Monica Bay and more out toward the desert. Later, when they happen, I can feel it underground. So you've got a lot of aspects that we have here that no one else has, and to apply what's being done in other regions and not the adaptive management that the state talks about, use the what's happening here, is a problem in execution. So I really think if you want to talk adaptive management, you've got to talk about the reality of what we have and what we have to deal with and what we have to mitigate, and if it's even feasible to do it, including stormwater capture, so they can do a financial market for stormwater capture credits. I was in a meeting in the Federal Reserve Bank about this a few years ago. So there are larger plans that you need to get a hold of here.
I certainly take your point about there being region-specific characteristics here that need to be considered, and I would go back to One, I think that, I mean, we do have experience, not just nationally, but we have experience regionally with green streets. But additionally, for the projects that are being conducted, in fact, many of the eWIMPs that have projects that are already underway, there's been a lot of analysis, and I think, you know, there will be analysis, geotechnical analysis, consideration of certain risks that need to be considered in terms of appropriate siting of these projects. That is all something that is going to be coming. These eWIMPs, I think in many ways, and I think a lot of permittees are probably already recognizing and thinking about this, these eWIMPs, as detailed as they are, do not contain everything, and they weren't meant to contain everything. They can't contain every project-specific detail. They can't include the complete financial strategy with every detail. Once these eWIMPs are in the process of being implemented, we're going to see much more detail on concept designs, engineering designs, the looking into these specific projects, the additional permitting and CEQA processes. We're going to see more work done on financial strategies where there's going to be linkages. We've heard some of this today, linkages with existing CIPs or development of new stormwater CIPs. And so these I just want to say it. These are not going to have every bit of information that we all want to have, but eventually as we move towards implementation, there will be a lot more evaluation on a project-specific basis that's going to be developed over the next years as these begin the implementation phase.
I want you to be aware of, Citizens got together, they have a neighborhood integrity initiative, which is a city ballet only ballot initiative that's out for signature right now, who will require the city to undergo their general plan. If the municipalities do what they need to do by law, it would be easier, but they're not. We have no transportation and circulation element that's current. We just have a mobility element. And a lot of this can be addressed in the normal course of state law, and then it's not. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of people, especially in this area, we get taxed a lot in LA, we're fed up. So, but again, it's SIM-initiated and very much supported. So you have to look at when things go to court and they affect your aspect. You've got to look at it now to see where your part is in this, because the cities are just not doing their job. And these include the elected officials who don't even understand this problem.
Thanks for your comment. We do have another comment from Mr. Franklin. I also want to encourage anybody else who wants to come up as well, just to make sure everybody has an opportunity if you have any other questions. But go ahead.
One more process question. In the event of the petition is filed to challenge the decision to approve or deny, if you file it with the water board, this region, is it heard by the local regional water board or is it heard by the state board?
The regional board would consider it, would first consider whether to take up the petition, and then on the basis of that decision, the state board would then make a decision regarding whether it would take on the decision. But typically in this sort of situation, the regional board would first consider and decide how to address the petition before the state board would take it up. And we are, I'm speaking as I am not an attorney, caveat. So if I say anything wrong, and there are attorneys in the room, of which I know there are at least some, I apologize. But, I mean, we can certainly follow up with you regarding more details about that process, that administrative process.
Do you know, are there fees for the public to do that?
No. There's no fee. Any other questions, comments for me, for each other? If not, and Sam, do you have any questions? Okay. Okay. Well, I again want to thank everybody for coming. I really appreciate it for all the groups coming, for Heal the Bay, LA Waterkeeper, and NRDC, for Mr. Frankel and the Stillid for coming and sharing your thoughts. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day this morning. It's very, very important. It's a lot of effort is being put in by many, many, countless people. I wonder sometimes how many people, but I know countless hours and countless people are involved in this process, and I'm really pleased to see how it's coming together. So thanks, everybody. I really appreciate your time today.
How's it going?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, actually.
Studio City? Mission Starts.
Yeah, big.
Now, I haven't called them. I don't know if you spent all the problems on it. That's not really an urban runoff cleanup project. Before it gets to the river. It's not a reach me, right?
I'll just keep it.
Thank you. here come
on.
It was another one because they put one out.
Thank you.